We are live for the last time in the year 2024 as we head into 2025. And I know many of you guys are my age, a little bit younger, a little bit older, or even a lot older. And it's kind of crazy to have been born, you know, in the 60s or 70s, like many people in this audience, or even the 80s, I imagine, and realize we grew up and we came up in the 1900s. We entered a new century and a new millennia, and we're a quarter of the way, roughly, through the newest century. It's kind of crazy. I remember being a kid, and, you know, some of the old people around me, you know, were born in like 1888 or something like that, and thinking, that's crazy that these people lived in a different century than the only thing they'll all ever know. And of course, as a kid, didn't really think ahead and go, hey, dummy, you're going to be that person someday. And it's just a good time when we get to the end of a year and we mark going into the quarter of the next century to take a look at what do we think's coming. So I want to tell you some things today. Today's show will be a little bit different than typical. I'm not going to go through and tell you everything we're going to talk about and then talk about it because I have got a list. I thought I'd get 20 to 30 things. I've got 50 concrete predictions for you today. So I'm going to go rapid fire. And rapid fire, even for me when I'm rapid fire, I'm going to go quick through all this. There's no commercials today or anything like that other than I'll just say, you've got some last-minute shopping to do, please start your shopping at T-Spaz. That's all I'll say about it from a commercial standpoint. And consider becoming a member of my program. We're just going to go right on into it. I'm also going to kind of say this. Everything I'm going to tell you today, I believe, is going to be accurate and wrong at the exact same time. And why? Because I am an honest man. I'm not going to make a prediction that I don't think has a basis in reality. And I also know that a lot of my predictions may come true partially, not quite the way that I said, certainly not the way that I've been. I've had people say, you got this exactly right. And I'm like, I got it like 80% right. And I don't know if you wanted it for me or you didn't understand me, but I didn't say that piece of it. And I got that part wrong. Or somebody say, you got this all wrong. I'm like, I got that one exactly right. So it's just, you'll never please everybody. But if anybody wants to play secretary today and do some kind of jack tracker for 2025 and see how many of these I get really, where you can look at it and go, overall, yeah, that happened. You know, I'd be happy. If I get 30 out of 50, I'll probably be better than most, you know, futurists or trend analyzers or things like that. I've been doing this a long time. I'll also, you know, completely fess up. I got up this morning at about 6:30, like I usually do during work days. I took the dogs out. I made coffee. I took a walk. And I said, self, what the hell are you going to talk about today? I didn't know what I would be talking about today until about 8 o'clock this morning. Hence, we're rolling at 1,300 instead of 1,200 on a Monday. So this list was compiled just thinking everything through and doing a little bit of research off the cuff in about 2 hours' time. So if I can get 30 of 50, right, if I can bat 600 in this game, I'll feel pretty good about it. The other thing I want to say before I go into this, nothing that I say today is an avocation. Like, I think we should do this, or this will be really good. It's not even a negative, like, this will be bad. I will give you good and bad of almost everything I talk about today. And that is just taking a look at, well, if this thing happens, what are the results? And a thing could be a bad thing and still have some good things that come from it. And a thing could be a good thing that still has some bad things come from it. And if you doubt that, just look at every war ever. Every war ever, no matter who won, there were good and bad things that came from that conflict eventually. So this is just telling you what I see coming based on what I've seen happen and, you know, having about half a century of rides around the sun to take everything in. And I've done this many, many times over the years, and I've tried to admit when I was wrong and learn from it. So let's see where we can go with this. I also have this broken up, and I will give you the main categories I have this broken up into. It's going to sound like we're playing Jeopardy or something with some weird topics, right? We have Bitcoin, global economics and politics, environmental, business, more politics, because that's just how my brain worked today, medicine, education, technology, science, diet and nutrition. And if you're thinking there's some overdraft there, right, overlap there, and if we really throw the politics thing out, what do you mean by it? Yes, there is. Because there will be times I'm talking about Bitcoin, not under the Bitcoin thing. There'll be times I'm talking about science that's really under technology or technology under. These are just the way that I brain dumped this morning into an outline. And I should probably pull up, honest to God, so you can see what I'm working off here today. I know you guys sometimes see me looking over at this screen and wonder if I'm reading a script or something. But let me just show this to you for those of you that are on the broadcast real quick, what I'm working off of today. I've got some text up above here, but it's not going to be anything that I'm reading because it's just basically as many words as I could get in for SEO for the whole show to get as much traffic as I can for the site. This list of bullet points, this is what I'm operating from here. Right here, that's it. So every time you see me, I'm just looking for the next bullet point and hoping I didn't miss the last one. And so with that in mind, let's start rolling on this thing here, guys. All right. And of course, I rolled it up. Bitcoin. Okay, let's start off with Bitcoin because it's going to be either the number one thing you tuned in for or the least thing you tuned in for. Either way, try to serve both sides of the audience. Number one, the top is far from in on this cycle. There's a lot of people like, is the crypto winter coming? You haven't paid attention to patterns. This is a halving year. You always have enough year in the up year in the post-halving year, and then you have crypto winter, and you head on into the next halving year and recovery and again and again and again. So I think we are far from the top. My top call is 180 to 250,000. 180 to 250,000. My best guess is you're looking at this cycle more likely a 50% versus an 80% retraction. I think you're going to see a lot less volatility, and you might not even see that big of a retraction. That means that we could hit 250, for instance, have a 50% retraction and end up crypto winter at $125,000 Bitcoin. And there are people right now that are shrieking, it crashed to 95,000, shut up, right? But that's just overall what I think there. I think we will have a U.S. strategic reserve of Bitcoin. I think Orange Band's going to do that. I don't think it's actually that hard to do. It will be measured in the billions of dollars initially, which is around, I mean, billions of dollars. It's jack shit. It's jack shit. In the world where we have $35 trillion in debt, it's going to be pitched as a way to save the U.S. from its own debt. I highly doubt it will work out that way, at least if it stays in the form that it will be in initially. And this idea that it's just this little thing we put aside. But we'll see. If we had done this as a nation, let's say 10 years ago, we'd be a long way towards it. But the only way you actually stabilize the dollar is to use this reserve asset for more credit, which is more debt. So we'll see how that all works out. But the overall prediction is Orange Band comes through and relatively quickly creates a Bitcoin strategic reserve. That is going to cause other nations to follow suit, and it may very much mute or even prevent a large retraction of crypto winter this time around. But we don't know until we get there. What I'm calling isn't that. What I'm calling is the crypto or the Bitcoin reserve happening. USDT or some other stable coin or some other group of stable coins will be used heavily over the Lightning Network or something secured by Bitcoin's primary network. And it will become the way that you get greater adoption of Bitcoin by people utilizing technology to send and receive money that can hold Bitcoin and dollars. In other words, Strike goes mainstream, though it may not be called Strike. There may be multiple options in this place. Because right now, when you think you're sending dollars to Bitcoin or Bitcoin to dollars with Strike, really it's a synthetic dollar in the middle that's eventually being converted to of course, they're all synthetic, right? But a generally accepted version of the dollar by the banking system on the other end. But you're going to see a lot done with stable coins across Lightning or something similar going into 2025 to spread adoption of Bitcoin as a savings tool by giving merchants the ability to let people spend Bitcoin, but also to receive dollars or to receive dollars and yet immediately convert some portion of their capital into a Bitcoin reserve for themselves. That will happen this year. BRICS will in some way likely integrate Bitcoin into what they're doing. These are the BRICS nations. They continue to grow beyond that, but the core original nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, will make Bitcoin part of what they're doing and may even begin to actually do some limited trade between each other using Bitcoin either as a currency or a reserve or a credit instrument. One of those things will happen. So I also think you'll see more major companies follow the MicroStrategy model of issuing debt, converting the debt into Bitcoin, and then issuing bonds against the debt. It has worked out way too well for this company, for other companies not to do it. There is a problem with that theory, though. It's kind of late in the cycle for these people to do it if we get the standard 80% correction. There's a good chance if you wait until mid-2025 to implement this strategy, you're looking at Bitcoin in $150,000, $175,000 range, and then you and your shareholders and everybody around you with the news cycle are going to have to hodl through crypto winter on the other end if it comes. So there may be hesitancy to do it because of where we're at in the cycle. There also may be, once you hear words like strategic reserve reality, an impetus to do it and to maybe think about how to do it in a way that we can swallow the loss on the other end and hold through the loss without getting called out based against margin and credit. So this will be, the companies that do it will be otherwise strong. And there's going to be a lot of come to Jesus moments where these folks realize, man, we could have done this a lot lower risk if we had done it a few years earlier. And that will be the main opposition to it as more and more companies consider it, like Microsoft did, but ended up rejecting it. We should have, we could have, we probably will, but not now. That will probably be a lot of boardrooms going through that. But there'll be some that come out and have the stones to do it, and they have enough financial reserve to make it work, and they'll figure it out and get it implemented. And some of the changes to rules of accounting and valuing of cryptocurrency that have occurred and will continue to occur will make that more probable. Next up, let's move on to global. I told you we're going to go rapid fire, guys. If you have questions, it's very important. I'm by myself. I got a long list today. The word question in all caps, and I'll highlight it. If you're on Rumble, I can't watch you in real time. I've got to swap tabs on the other computer to see you. If you put the word question in all caps, when I get the questions, I will get to you. So that's important today. Global economics and politics. Okay, I think there is going to be a huge focus on developing nationalized and localized economies. In other words, we're going to start looking, and not just us. In fact, we may be the ones dumb enough to do the least of it, but a lot of European countries and European equivalents to like states, so provinces, in Switzerland, they call them cantons, et cetera. A much greater focus on developing the local economy with less entropy of money out through imported goods, and the same at the national level in a lot of places. But globalization at the same time is going to continue to grow. It's going to seem like this bifurcation, and it's really not going to be. So those are two separate predictions. We have a growth of globalization and a growth of localization at the same time. And here's how that can occur. Not everybody's going to participate in the localized growth, okay? They're just not. They're going to be economies, and sometimes in the same country, maybe even in the same state, you have different counties or different regions of states or provinces. They're going to take totally different approaches based on what they feel and they actually have as far as resources. If you have a lot of resources that are strong tools to export, then you're going to want to export because you're bringing money in and you're sending material out that you have in surplus. This is basic global trade. If, however, you are limited in local resource, no matter how much you have in labor, no matter how much you have in an educated populace, no matter how much of everything that you think you have, if you don't have raw materials, you don't have raw materials. What's going to fuel this is more and more trade war mentality with the orange man's going to tariff everybody and everything except Panama. You notice we'll get to Panama later. But orange man has not threatened to tariff Panama. He threatened to take the canal back. Why? Because Panama doesn't give a fuck if we put a tariff on their shit because they export almost nothing to the United States. A little bit here and there, but not much. How often do you pick something off a shelf, look at it, and see a tag that says made in Panama? Not often. They're just not a major exporter to the United States. They are more a middleman. That's what the canal does for them. So he's threatening that because he has to threaten something to get what he wants because he's pissed about the cost of ships going through. But again, we'll save that for later. By end of this year, this is a hard metric. Track it. Go ahead. I will guarantee you I'm right. By the end of this year, 25% of vehicles will be electric. Wait before you start shrieking. I did not say in America. I didn't say in America. I said global. I'm talking about globally. If you look, and what I'm talking about is new vehicles produced onto the market. I'm not talking about all the legacy internal combustion engines that are already on the road. I'm saying total global production in 2025, a quarter of all new vehicles globally will be electric. And I know a lot of you don't believe that because you don't want to and you think electric is stupid. I am not telling you what I think it should be. I'm not telling you the world of musical freaking unicorn farts and guardian angels that give you what you want. I'm telling you that is the production schedule for the fucking globe right now. A quarter of all vehicles across the planet are going to be electric. And the number one producer of them is going to be China in a big way. It's not even going to be close. You won't see hardly any Chinese-made electric vehicles in America in 2025 because Orange Man will keep the tariff that he suggested that Brandon put in place because China's building the fuck out of them in Mexico. But when you go to Mexico, you're going to see electric vehicles all over the fucking place. And they're going to be building them for about 20 to 40% of what Tesla and other electric manufacturers in America, like Tello Trucks, will be building them for. Because it's not just about the labor rates in Mexico. It's about the regulation insanity in the United States. They want all of this green technology, but they've regulated the green technology out at the expense of protecting the environment from the green technology. We're just stupid is what I'm saying. But that's a hard prediction. End of year, 25% of new vehicles coming onto the roads across the globe, electric. They can't power them all. Yeah, and we'll find out what happens when that happens. I'm just telling you what's coming. They're going to produce these fucking things whether they work. Now, I'm not saying that like after like, and this will be by the end of the year, you'll have to look at the production not in March, but in December of 2025. The total percentage of vehicles coming off the assembly line and to market. And then you'll see 2026 where some people go, huh, maybe there wasn't enough power for all this shit. A lot of these are going to be sold into countries with far less stable electrical grids than our own, by the way. I do think on that note, I'll throw a bonus in for you. You're going to see a lot more talk and actually beginning steps toward the production of fusion energy, especially in the United States. Whether or not it actually goes ahead, we will see. But there's already a company in Virginia announced they're breaking ground and they're going to build the first ever fusion reactor, commercial scale fusion reactor in Virginia that should go online in the 2030s. So production now, but actual electrical production 2033, 2034, something like that. But we actually have working fusion models now that more energy comes out than goes in. We've been able to do fusion for a long time, a very long time. If it wasn't the 50s, it was the 60s, the first time we ever did it. But it takes more energy than you get out of it to do it in a controlled fashion other than a fusion bomb. But that's something that we're going to see rise very heavily. Green investments will surge, and some of it will be greenwashing, and some of it won't. But you're going to see a huge move toward investing in green technologies. And when I say green technology, I don't mean that it'll actually be green, but it will be called green, marketed green, and referred to as green, or environmentally friendly or some other bullshit. But you're going to see more growth there than in most other sectors going into this next year. It'll go right along with electric vehicles and clean grids, and we need more power. And they'll be talking about an energy crisis. If we don't build more power, this will be the excuse for your fusion energy and your other energy technologies that have been holding back. But the real driver, artificial intelligence, which we'll get to. For all the shit that the statists and the leftists talked about Bitcoin using so much energy. Bitcoin, in reality, the global mining power of Bitcoin uses less power annually than Americans use with Christmas lights from Thanksgiving to New Year's. I'm going to say that again, and you go fact check that shit if you don't believe me. If you took out the entire amount of energy the Bitcoin mining network uses annualized, it does not exceed how much energy Christmas lights in America use from Thanksgiving to January 1st. It's true. You don't have to like it. I don't give a shit. I'm not here for what you like. I'm here for what is. But you're looking at a 6x growth in power requirements in advanced nations where AI is being built over the next 10 to 15 years required just to run the AIs. Just to run the AIs and quantum, which we'll get to. I don't think people realize when you say, make me a list of, 10 of the healthiest freaking vegetables that I can be eating, and AI spits out that list, how many fucking GPUs went to make that happen? And the answer is a shitload, an absolute shitload. And Dowie is right. John Dowie here, he says, they freaked out about Bitcoin electricity, but no protest about the AI. None. What's funny is they did freak out about the internet. If you go back in time, which you can do thanks to the internet, you can find all kinds of people freaking the fuck out about how much energy the internet was going to use. And it was going to destroy the polar bear's habitat and everything else. And then they freaked out when people really started using email heavily, the same fucking argument. As though putting a letter in a truck and a plane and moving it from Florida to Washington took less energy than sending an email from Florida to Washington. So the same is new again. Part of why I can do this is I can just look at the patterns and then look at the present and apply the pattern times the present to the future. That's how you can throw out a list like this and be mostly right on it. And I do think I'll be mostly right. Again, I am up for anybody keeping score here. You can go by the show notes to help fill in the blanks. And somebody score. I would love the last live stream of 2025 to be me going through this list with somebody keeping me honest on the other end of it. So if somebody wants to do that, please do it. France is going to lose pretty much all it has left in controlling Africa. I don't think most people know how much colonial influence France still has on many nations in Africa. And a little bit of scuttlebutt you've been hearing about conflicts in Africa and things like that, it has to do with some of these countries that are just done with France telling them how to manage their countries. And there's been a very concerted effort by France and the European community as a whole to act like it's not the case. To say, well, we don't control Niger. Like, what do you mean? We don't control it. Yeah, you control their money, you control the country. So, of course, France uses the euro today. They're part of the European Union, and they adopted the euro. So the franc is gone, not the colonial franc. The colonial franc is still used, and forcibly so, in quite a bit of banking in Africa. And Africa has been making moves, different nations, to get full and total independence economically from France, because that's more important than anything else right now to them. And that's coming. And that death is going to be gradually than suddenly. It's been gradually for several years. This is where it will eventually pop. And there is no economic or political will in France for their government to continue doing what they've been doing. They have their own problems and problems of their own making. They wanted to colonize Africa and keep control over their colonies through economics. And Africa has begun colonizing France. It's like, you know, the Crusades all over again, basically. Yay. Good job, France. Marcon's government, by the way, here's a bonus, completely falling apart. He will not be here by the end of the year. He will be gone. When they say the orange man's going to France to meet with their head of government, it won't be him. Okay? It just won't. Let's see. Rise of the Global South. So the Global South is mostly Africa. but it would also include other nations and other parts of the world, including parts of South America, et cetera, including nations that might be considered very friendly to the United States. It's still what's being termed as the Global South. And as a whole, these nations are tired of basically the G7 and to a lesser extent the G20 nations telling them what to do with themselves, controlling them through the International Monetary Fund and international banks, etc. And they are throwing their lot in heavily with the BRICS nations. And as part of this, not only are you going to see assertion of sovereignty through things like the last vestiges of French colonialism being kicked out, you're also going to see a rise in trade between these nations and Russia, India, and China specifically out of Africa. And you're going to see a lot of almost crime family benevolence from nations like Russia, giving them shitloads of grain and stuff like that, like stuff that doesn't really cost Russia that much money that they have in abundance that they can give or really great terms, sell at cost, whatever, to these countries to help them through this time. But and they're not going to ask for a lot initially, but they're going to be in Godfather mode. All I want from you is a promise in the future of a favor. And that alliance is going to be strengthened heavily throughout the year. Global South, Russia, India, China trade, along with the other BRIC nations and South American nations, but specifically Africa and those three. It will be a different landscape economically. You will have to, if you want to fact check me on this one, you're going to have to do some research through the year and at the end of the year to see that it happened. You're not going to hear much about this because it doesn't make us look good and it doesn't make Orange Man bad enough look bad enough to the lunatic left to make a big deal out of it. They'll have other things to go crazy about that we'll get to. We will continue to have the trend of nations de-dollarizing, separating themselves from the dollar. What we did with sanctions on Russia, seizing their assets, shutting down their ability to trade, including this is the big thing. It's one thing when a nation like the United States says, we do not want you to trade with Russia. And a bunch of our allies go, fine, we will not trade with Russia. And some of our other allies or friendlies toward us will say, well, we won't trade with Russia except for these few things. You know, I'm not saying good or bad, but that's just one level of that type of sanctioning. There's another type of sanctioning altogether where you like throw a country off SWIFT. And you impose penalties on nations that continue to trade with them. You seize dollar-denominated assets. You seize dollar-denominated bank accounts and things like that. And even nations who were all about, look, okay, fine, I won't trade with Russia. Look at what we did, and they go, but how do I know that they won't do that to me when they're not happy with me someday? And isn't this a bad idea to have everything in one place, even if it looks like it's in a lot of places, if it's all in dollar-denominated assets that all can only move through the U.S.-sanctioned world global petrodollar system, then maybe it's all in one place, and maybe we don't need this. So you're going to see a lot more de-dollarization happen. The Bitcoin reserve may, in fact, help save the dollar. It doesn't mean it'll prevent de-dollarization. It really doesn't. And this is why the crypto dollar may actually do more to protect the dollar, but limit what America can demand. So what's the crypto dollar? What I talked about earlier, USDT, stable coins, call it whatever you want to, synthetic dollars. If we can push the dollar throughout the world on crypto blockchains, whether it be Bitcoin Lightning with a crypto dollar riding it like a train riding rails. So I've got my Amtrak rails, but I'll let this other railroad use them, right? And I have almost unlimited capacity on those rails. Or if it is just the direct, like, more adoption of this synthetic dollar around the world, either one of those will help stabilize the dollar because they will spread inflation out across the globe. And the more the dollar is accepted, the longer it can run this insane lunatic cycle of continuing to increase the debt against the dollar. Because one of the things people fail to realize, and it's because it doesn't make any fucking common sense at all that you would do this, is that the $34 trillion really is representing how much money there is. And it's all ours. So it's our wealth is debt, and our debt is our wealth. And there is a point where that system has to fall apart. But if I told you, let's say in 2010, that by the quarter mark of the century, we would be $34-35 trillion in debt, you wouldn't believe me. Because you didn't, because I did. I did tell you that. And then you would say, but if you're right, then surely that's when the collapse comes. And I said, no, it won't. And it didn't. Because that's how lunatic this system is. This system has a lot of counterbalances and ways that it props itself up. It is not the linear system so many people think, where if you pull one thread, the whole thing falls apart. There's a certain number of threads before the net collapses. And we're not there yet. And this plan, and I believe it is a plan to globalize the dollar, will have a really strong use case in nations that want to trade in dollars, but they don't want to do it subject to the whims of the United States government. In other words, they want to use our money, but they do not want to have us have the ability to shut that money off. And you might say, well, then how would that work? It works like Bitcoin. The United States government can adopt a Bitcoin reserve. They can hold it in the United States Treasury in a series of addresses. But they don't get to decide who else can use Bitcoin. And if they have 2 million Bitcoin, right, which there's only 21 million Bitcoin will ever exist. If they have 2 million of them, they still don't get to do that. Can they fuck with the price by dumping a bunch of it? Yes, and hurt themselves when they do. That's what people understand. Well, these people that have all this Bitcoin, what if they dump it? Well, then they harm themselves because you can't dump it all at once. You have to dump it over time, and the value of what you're holding continues to go down, right? So somebody like MicroStrategy is not going to start dumping Bitcoin unless they absolutely have to, because every time they dump, they're going to drive the cost down, and they're going to drive their cost versus their basis ratio out of whack until they bankrupt themselves. So their self-preservation mode, the best thing they can do, if they're in the position that MicroStrategy is in for right now, is keep buying and don't sell. That's just a standard practice that must be adopted once you go down that path, because Bitcoin will survive and you won't. Like it is like fucking with a venomous snake, and there is no anti-venom for the snake. You put the snake in a box, and you can keep adding snakes to the box, and the snakes stay in the box. But if you stick your hand in the box, you get the bite. That's what's going to go on there. I want to make sure I'm not skipping anything. Orange Man will return to North Korea. This is really two and one here. But Orange Man will go to North Korea. He may not do it in 2025, but a date will be announced at minimum in 2025. And by 2026, he'll actually step foot in either South Korea, and Kim Jong Ding Dong will come across this time to him, or he'll go back across again. There will be renewed talks with North Korea about de-escalating their nuclear plans, and that will be facilitated by something I'll say later. And as soon as I say it, you'll be like, oh, yeah, that would do that. And there will, I'll tell you what it is right now. There'll be a summit with Russia. There's going to be a major summit with Putin and Orange Man, and the left will lose their mind over it and say he's Putin's bitch or tool, or he's a Russian asset, or whatever stupid fucking nonsense they're going to say. But that's going to happen. And that's going to largely be facilitated by some other issues, like there'll be a fairly quick wind down to the war in Ukraine, which I know is on here somewhere, and I feel like I should have hit it by now. So if I've met, nah, it's further down. That's what I did. I split politics into two different types of politics. Environmental, let's go on that one for a while. One of the biggest buzzwords you will hear in 2025 is a word that's been around a long time, but it has not been embraced by the mainstream, the media, the corporatocracy, the oligarchy, et cetera. They will embrace it this year. And that word is rewilding. Rewilding. And that sounds like a great thing. Rewilding. Rewilding. Wow. Yay, rewilding. But you know what they're going to want to rewild? All the destitute urban areas is where they're going to start. They're going to look at places in Detroit, in Chicago, where like people just don't live. I don't think people understand like how big Chicago really is and how much of Chicago there's no people in. And it is rewilding itself. Okay. Because like I've seen documentaries on this happening in Detroit too, where trees are literally eating buildings. Like it's like a 4-story parking garage and the dirt accumulated on it. And the tree started eating the floor, and it looks like a temple out of a movie but it's Detroit. It's Michigan. It's not the tropics. It's crazy what's happening in some of these places. So if they did that, you know, there's just a lot of shit in the way, and it could easily be torn down. The materials could be recycled. Something good could happen. But that won't be where they do it. They'll just let that continue to degrade. Now, they're going to want to move people out of certain areas to rewild them. And Joe H. is saying Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 would be the new version thereof. Yeah, along those lines, along those lines. Let's see, these areas need to be rewilded. And so this area needs to be rewilded. And this area that's not as bad, well, what we need to do there is do like a lot of like high density population. And we're going to take the people from here and move them over here and rewild this area. And it'll be great. It'll be a park. All the people that live here now can go there. Well, this area that was struggling but surviving and not a complete crime-ridden shithole, we're going to take all the people from the completely crime-ridden shithole and move them in and go, gee, we can't figure out why it all went wrong. But that's just going to be part of this rewilding thing. There will be some good from this as well. Rewilding is not a terrible idea. To put ecosystems in place that can function on their own without human intervention, like, you know, like parks that are natural, like national parks or state parks and things like that, that are pretty much wilderness, not necessarily terrible in of itself. But what will get left out is, first of all, the United States has more wilderness than Africa does. The United States, the country, has more intact wilderness than Africa, the continent, right now. Period. Most of the United States still is wilderness. We have probably one of the most environmentally protected nations that's ever existed just because of our size and our population distribution being a natural buffer to this. In other words, people that just don't start going in and clearing out thousands of acres of mountain land around in the United States. And most of our wilderness is mountainous, so it's not conducive to farming. So where South America, they'll go in and they'll, you know, they'll clear cut hectares and hectares and hectares of rainforest to turn it into cattle grazing land or to turn it into like soybean producing farms. Most of the wilderness that's preserved in the United States doesn't work well for that. The soil ain't right. And it's not just poor quality. It's like soil is non-existent. Like here where I live, you're not going to put a farm where I live, even though it's flat, because the dirt's 11 inches deep. You can't do it. It's not profitable. But when you try to farm high elevations without very specific techniques that are very labor intensive and not suited to the automation that is becoming more and more in commonplace, we have this massive amount of protection. So the rewilding really needs to be more around our farmlands. That's where we need it. And some of that will happen, riparian buffer areas and things like that. Deep sea mining. What the hell is that? Okay, so you're going to have this massive increase in power requirements. You're going to need to beef up the grid, and you got to build a shitload of electric vehicles because the EV mandates are not going to go away even though they're stupid. You also have this massive push for more and more green energy. And other than nuclear, the only green energy that we have requires the ability to store energy from peak production times to get through low production times. All that means we need batteries. Whether we need batteries for Tesla power walls on people's houses hooked up to solar panels on the roof, or we need massive battery systems in factories that rely on renewable energy, or we need a massive, this is what we really need and where we're headed. They're just not telling you this yet. What we are going to end up with eventually, and this isn't necessarily bad, except how it will be used for control. So just pause there so you can understand what I mean when I say I'm the weatherman and when I say this good and this bad out of the same thing. The thing itself that I'm about to describe in of itself isn't bad, but it creates the ability to be abused by controlling parties like, oh, I don't know, builder of castles tweeted something I didn't like today, so I'm going to shut off his power, or I'm going to throttle him down or whatever, no matter how much money he has to afford for energy, I'm going to throttle him down because he uses too much. I don't like his face. He says the wrong words, right? So that's the negative connotation, that you have more control if you put everybody all electric and you put them into a smart grid distributed storage environment, okay? But what they really want to do is they want batteries everywhere. And the way you get batteries everywhere is you start with an electric vehicle mandate. And you get as many EVs on the road as possible. And people start plugging their cars in at home, even if it's a slow charge. However, the battery in the car now is on the grid, and it is both a taker and a potential giver. And then you say, but if you don't want that, you need one of these power walls or something, some other product like it. And you'll start to see more and more subsidies. All the subsidies up till now have been to put panels on the roof. You're going to start seeing major initiative towards subsidies to put batteries in the home, right? And once you do that, you can get into a situation where the electric companies stop having to build storage facilities and they only have to build production facilities. And production works fairly well from a centralized standpoint. It's not as good as a decentralized model, but for the consumer mindset, I want to flip the switch. I want the lights to come on. Always. I don't want to ever come home, flip my switch, and see a light blink that says, not right now. I want to turn my electric oven on and I want it 450 fucking degrees in there. Right. That mindset, power generation from a centralized location that you don't have to worry about, you just pay the bill, works. From an energy storage model, it's terrible. It's terrible. But if you can distribute the storage and draw common and deliver common in a distributed model from a centralized production model, that actually works fairly well. So we could build that in a way that puts the consumer first, that puts the people first, that puts the country first, and it could be good. It just probably won't be. But it doesn't mean no good will come from it. But that's what they're going to do, is push out all of this battery power. So that's a bonus prediction because it's not even on the list. That is why you're going to see so much of a need for more and more and more rare earth elements. And what most people do not realize is most of the rare earth elements are in the ocean. And there's various ways of getting them out. Some is actually literally mining them from the ocean floor, but some of it is actually mining them straight out of the ocean water. This is going to start all kinds of friggin' arguments and fights. And who owns this water? It's international waters. Can anybody do it? But it's, you know, the South China Sea, all of that shit comes into it. The United States has a real habit of saying, yeah, we have international waters, but these international waters are still our national waters, right? All kinds of shit about this and telling other people what to do and pulling all of this mineral, these rare earth minerals, these rare earth elements out of our oceans for this distributed power storage model. Okay. Carbon capture will be the topic of the day going into 2025. At the same time we're developing all this technology, we're going to realize that no matter how fast we go, we're going to burn oil and gas for 150 years. We just are. And if you're the kind of person that thinks we're not supposed to, sorry, don't give a fuck. We're going to do it. And if you're the kind of person that thinks we're supposed to do it, we're going to do it, but it's not because you think so. It is a hard reality that if all these things I'm saying happen as fast as they possibly can, we cannot provide the world with energy and storage capacity to meet our basic needs, let alone our desires, for 100 years plus. It's not doable. It can't happen. It's not going to happen. It can't be done in 1,500 years. With the technology that we can even see today, let alone build today. To get to a capacity where we will be able to store the power necessary to make this model really work globally on an ongoing basis, we will have to develop carbon-based supercapacitors, which we can build right now. We've been able to build for decades. We can't build them reliably and repeatably. And what I'm saying is you can take, if you think about charcoal, you go a little further than charcoal, you get graphite, and you go further than that, you get graphene. And we can take graphene and we can treat it with lasers, and we can make batteries that would fit in a cell phone with no memory, that never go bad, that last damn near forever, And when you charge it, can run the phone about 10 times longer than the battery that's in the phone right now. We can build that today. The problem is only one out of about 100 actually does what it's supposed to do. It's not repeatable. It's like making semiconductor chips, except it's the outcome is way worse. And what I mean is when you make semiconductor chips, about 1 in 7 are actually top-end chips because you bake them like a cookie, and you want them all to come out the same, but they don't. No matter how much control we put over making those chips, they do not come out the same. About 1 in 7 are the top-performing chips. They go on the highest-end equipment. And then you got kind of like second, third, fourth tier chips to like, you, then you got like your tarted chips that barely function, but they all can do something. When you try to make supercapacitors out of graphene, the ones that don't work don't do anything. They're not recyclable. You can't do anything with them. They're useless. So it's not possible. So that leap will take that technology being developed or some other technology we haven't even looked at yet, right? Something that we haven't even thought of yet. We cannot with rare earth elements build enough battery storage capacity to make these models work without a constant on and off generation tech that doesn't require the storage, i.e. nuclear. Nuclear is it. That's all we have. So fusion, and you got to imagine what an alien species looking at us right now going, These fucking idiots are building windmills and solar panels, and they mastered the atom in the 40s, and they've had relatively safe nuclear since the 60s, and they could have had the safest nuclear ever built by the 80s, but they didn't because they were afraid of it, and right now they could be doing thorium reactors, and they're still out there putting up giant fans to turn a giant alternator to make energy that's not reliable. And they're digging giant holes in the ground in the name of saving their environment to get, cobalt out of the ground in Australia with giant machines or with child labor in Africa. This is a helpless species. We don't want anything to do with them. But that's where we are there. But carbon capture is going to be the word of the day. And the biggest thing in carbon capture in 2025, and you might think I'm saying this because I love the technology itself, but I'm not, because I think there'll be a lot of greenwashing to go along with a lot of hardcore benefit, is going to be biochar. Biochar is the future of carbon capture technology because it works, the math works, the economics work, and the technology works because it's ancient. When you carbonize material, that carbon is no longer available to go into the atmosphere. And we have a fixed carbon supply on this planet. There is no more carbon today and no less carbon today than the few little objects we hurled into space on this planet. There's some carbon up in space now because we sent it there. But overall, the carbon supply on this planet has been exactly what it is for 4+ billion years. Carbon is high enough on the scale that it cannot be formed other than in a star. Since we don't have a star on Earth, we have a star, 93 million miles from Earth, no more carbon. So when you pull carbon out of the atmosphere for thousands of years or more, it's gone. And then CO2, that's where people get confused about, they think biochar is voodoo. You say for every pound of biochar, you sequester about 3 pounds of CO2. That doesn't seem to make any sense. Well, what's a CO2 molecule made of? One carbon, two oxygens. The two oxygens are still there. They can go do other oxygen things, but they no longer have that carbon molecule to bond with. So this works on paper, and all these corporations that have pushed for all this carbon credit score bullshit, they need chips for the table to play the game with now, and biochar is the easy chips. So it's not so much that it's the best thing in the world. It's just that it fits the thing that they created the need for, and it also happens to have some real benefits. It can benefit soil. It can benefit building technology. It can benefit, what's the word I'm looking for, where you clean, remediation, bioremediation, cleaning up chemical spills. It can clean water. Can make stronger roads, stronger concrete. So it actually is a good tech, but they're going to buzzword the shit out of it. And I'm afraid they may actually harm it a little bit overall in the end when it doesn't do everything that people expect it to. Because literally we live in this microwave society now where they say they're going to clean up the atmosphere and they're going to tax carbon and whatever. And these retards literally think, well, if we do that for a year, the temperature should go down. That's not how it works. Even in their models, it's not, but that's how it works in the mind of the imbeciles that are driving everything as the public. Then we're going to go into business now, and we're going to talk a little bit about AI in this. Businesses will take one of three approaches to AI. This is my safest prediction because we have an analog to look at that's perfect for it, and that's the internet. And businesses took one of these three approaches to the internet. And they will take one of these three approaches to AI. Limited, ignored, and built on. So what I mean by that is most established companies will not be stupid enough to completely 100% ignore artificial intelligence. Just like most established companies were not stupid enough to completely ignore the internet. They looked at this and said, I think this will be a thing, but we don't know. And we know what works and we know what pays the bill and we don't want to risk it. So a lot of companies created internet divisions and they put websites online and they said, fend for yourself, fend for yourself. And the companies literally created an internal rivalry. Some of you were around and far enough in your careers, you probably remember this. There was a physical store and an internet store. If you went to the physical store with something you found on their website, they're like, I'm sorry, we don't talk to each other. And if you went to the physical store and you wanted to order it on the internet, maybe you could, maybe you couldn't. But there was no communication. There was like an isolation. That was the limited approach. We're not going to ignore it. We're not going to fully integrate it across our business. This is what most businesses today are doing and will continue to do next year with AI if they are established businesses. In other words, I know it pays the bill. I do not want to risk it, but I do not want to ignore it. The more entrenched a company is and the more successful a company is today, and the less they actually depend on technology, other than their website, right, for orders and shit like that, the less they'll use up to the point of completely ignoring it. This is a fad. It's going to go away. It's no big deal. And they will be the minority, but they will all be established businesses or real little mom and pops that think it's a demon and don't want to touch it. All right. You're all out of those people. You got 1 or 2 years and you're done. Or I hope you're doing business with people across the street from you. I'm telling you, I don't care if you make fucking soap. If you make soap and you market it and sell it primarily online, you better do some integration of AI into your business. Okay? So you're going to have that limited. You're going to have the ignored. We're too important. We don't want somebody telling us what to do. Those companies are going to get really hurt and they're going to be late to the party and they're going to move at breakneck speed and they're going to end up paying the third kind of company to integrate AI into their business, the same way they paid internet marketing companies to integrate internet marketing into their companies because they ignored it up until the mid-2000s, and they came to people like me and said, help us do this. The same way they did it with social media. I can't tell you how many clients I had. They were on board with web marketing. Web marketing, okay, here's a holistic web marketing program. A third of the proposal was based on social media engagement. Social media engagement. And this is, you know, MySpace was dead, but still around, kind of, sort of, right? But Facebook was really, like, Facebook was hot at the time I'm talking about this. Twitter was this little weird thing at the time I'm talking about. But it was like, you got to do it all. We don't know which one's going to catch. This is how you integrate this across all your platforms. Well, we don't want to do that. It's stupid. And 3 years, 4 years later, these same companies had massive need of social media outreach and were asking the same people they told to fuck off to help them do it now. And they had to catch up. There is the third kind, though, of company built on AI. These are the companies of the future. And this has nothing to do with AI in and of itself. Okay? This has to do with the pattern throughout history. I guarantee you there were companies that ignored the fucking telephone. It's hard to believe, but just a couple old people ago, right, in generations, you ordered a catalog from somebody like Sears. The catalog came. You saw a product and a description, and you didn't know exactly if it did what you needed it to do. And you sat down, right, and you wrote a fucking letter, and you put a stamp on it, you stuck it in the mail, and it went to Sears, and somebody there wrote you a letter back and mailed it back to you, and you said, oh, okay, and then you sent your order in. And that whole process might have taken a couple months before you bought the product and they delivered the product to you, okay? That was reality. And I guarantee you when the phone came out, there were business people, very successful, fuck this shit, this phone thing, it's a fad. Only rich, our customers are middle class and farmers. Only rich people are going to use these stupid phone things. This is just going to happen all over again with AI. The companies that when they saw that technology, especially they were somewhat established already, but not fully established. They were still in that fight mode in the beginning. They said, we're going to make sure that you can call us with any question and get an answer the minute you call us, became dominant. The companies that integrated web technology to the point before people even knew how to use it, but by the time they did, when they sent a question and they got an answer, became dominant. This is all going to happen again. And new companies, I don't even care if you have money backing you. I don't care if you got some investors and you've got some capital. They never have the capital of a Microsoft. They never have the capital of a Tesla. You know, they have what Tesla had when it was brand new, not what it has today. Companies that have what they do today, they slowly and conservatively integrate tech. Companies that have a limited amount of money, a limited amount of personnel, and a little amount of time, they take the thing that will move them the fastest and the furthest, and they grab it and they use it like jumping on a motorcycle and hauling ass. It doesn't always work, but when it works, it's always explosive and it's always extremely disruptive. And those are the three companies that you'll be able to look at a company by the end of this year if you have the right lens to look through, and you'll be able to say they're an ignorer, right? They are a limited, or they are built on and building upon AI. And this is not my advocation for the tech. This is just the way it's going to happen. Because if you don't, it's going to be the same reason that they've tried to keep steroids illegal in sports. Okay, if you think AI is bad, then you want no companies to use it. And if you can do that, then you can forestall it. But you can't do that. It's impossible. Companies are going to use it whether you want them to or not. I don't care if you pass a law that says they can't. They're still going to do it. They'll call it something else. They'll build it in-house. It's too powerful. It's too well-known. The freaking genie's out of the bottle. It's not going back in. So once one company starts using it, the companies that don't are going to get rolled over. And any new disruptive tech works that way. The gig economy will begin to target companies as the next independent providers. So right now, when you think gig economy, you think Uber, you think Lyft, maybe something smaller like Rover, which is people that pet sit, or you think of like Instacart, where somebody goes and does your grocery shopping. But if you look inside there, you'll see that now a lot of Uber drivers aren't independent anymore. They represent a driver within a group of vehicles that represent a fleet that's then contracted by Uber. The problem with that model is you're going to see more of that, but that's one piece of this. That's one prediction in my model here, is that you'll see this gig economy begin to actually connect customers with companies rather than people. But the second part of it has to do with the biggest problem the gig economy has today. You will only ever make so much money as an Uber driver. And the reason isn't that people won't pay good money to get a ride. The reason is that the corporate model requires the corporation to make a large margin, because Uber is seen as not a taxi company, a tech company. And this is why it has a bigger problem than, let's say, like a Vibro or an Airbnb that I'll get to in a second. So since they're a technology platform, their margin is supposed to be big. That's what the market expects, because they really don't own any vehicles, right? I'm sure they do somewhere now, and somebody will get all their panties in a wad. But overall, the whole model of Uber is we don't own the vehicles. We make sure the drivers are not axe murderers, and we do our best with that in a way where at least we don't get sued when it turns out we were wrong. And we connect customer and driver. But how skilled does a person need to be an Uber driver? If you're not an axe murderer, you don't have a massive, you know, a felonious criminal record, you can be anything from a fifth generation American housewife to a new immigrant, and you can be an Uber driver. Every single person that has a driver's license and a decent driving record without a felony record can be an Uber driver. What does that make it? It makes it a commodity. It makes it a commodity. If we move into the middle, right, if we move into the middle of that world, you move into something a little more exclusive, like owning homes and doing something like an Airbnb or a Vibro. But again, what we're doing is a company that is a tech platform connecting homeowner with renter. And there's a shitload of real estate out there. There's over 130 million owner-occupied homes in America. And there's millions and millions of second homes that make up the majority of Vibro Airbnb. Okay? This is also a commodity. A house, I don't care how important it is to you, it's a commodity. It sticks and bricks. That's what it is, right? And some people inside any of these will create their niches, the tiny house village, you know, these things that are like sell at a real premium. And even though the platform's taking a big piece, the end user that's actually selling access is making a good living too. But in the end, this is a race to the bottom. How far can I squeeze my driver before he quits? And I don't even care if he quits as long as somebody replaces him. What if you see the gig economy shift to high margin professions where the provider is actually getting a higher revenue piece and the platform a lower one, like business consulting, like lawyers, like things that are not generally seen as commodities, specialized skill sets. Think of things like Angie's List, or the Good Contractors List on steroids, where you're individually connected to the customer. It's like a lead generation tool, but with certain assurances about their qualifications, to the point where if I want my roof done, it doesn't even matter who I pick. I know that I have a base level of performance from everyone. You're going to see tech like that rolled out in a big way in 2025. The gig economy moving to the point where you're actually going to see W-2 jobs decline and 1099 jobs increase in this type of a scenario. And that's going to give a lot of people the opportunity to basically be in business for themselves, empowered by a platform, rather than just being a commodity the platform is selling. If you're good at what you do and you can build a reputation, you're going to have access to a market in a new way at a higher level. And these things exist. What I'm saying is they're going to become more the norm than the exception. And AI-based home education will explode by end of year. And what I'm talking about here is many of you, even if you don't use it, you're familiar with Excellus, because we use this for our grandkids. I've talked about them a long time. They're an accredited school, K-12. Your kid basically does school online, but it's not homeschool in the traditional sense. It's home-based education, but it's a learning platform that delivers pretty much a uniform learning experience for all children with some level of discretion about which courses you take. A little bit more flexibility than, let's say, a high school elective program is, right? You can take a lot of different options through the platform. But it is human-based mostly. In other words, all of the lessons were actually created by humans and taught by humans. A lot of the grading is done with automation, though I don't know I would really refer to it as AI, though I've started to see more AI come into it. But with tools like we just talked about last week, where we can take a book and drop it into a tool, and the tool will create an outline, a test, a podcast, a lesson format out of whatever you stick into it, it's going to get too fast and too easy, and you're probably going to see half a dozen legitimate competitors to the existing platforms now that are almost 100% AI driven. Never for my kid. Okay, whatever. Go be a Luddite. I'm not telling you what you should do with this because I know what I'm going to get. I can hear the angry keystrokes coming from people that type with two fingers right now, or like the two thumb typers on their phone. You're so stupid. I'm not telling you what I think should happen. I'm telling you what's going to happen. And what I think and what you think isn't going to affect that at all. I'm telling you, these are the things that are coming. You're going to see massive explosion in AI-driven education. for just K-12 education, let alone other things we'll get to later. Politics. Trump's cabinet picks are going to be hard fought in the House, but no two will be more likely to fail to get approved than Kash Patel and RFK. Pretty simple prediction. I'm not going to say a lot more about it, and I don't think anybody's going to be blown away by that one when it happens. Odds of them getting approved. I actually think RFK has a higher probability of getting approved for HHS than Kash Patel does to run the FBI. There's a lot of bullshit about Kennedy out there. Some's legit, too, by the way. He's a vaccine denier or whatever the fuck that means. He's never denied a vaccine exists in his life. He is for transparency so that people can make fully informed decisions about medical treatments, including vaccines, which, by the way, the whole world agreed to at one time, you know, because a certain thing happened in a certain country. There used to be two countries and became one country again. You know, we hung some people and stuff, and we made these big agreements. And one of them was that nobody should ever be given a medical treatment without their fully informed consent. Right. And he actually wants to do that. That's crazy talk. But a lot of it is hype and just orange man hatred. And I think there's enough political will to get him through the ropes. And I think he's enough of a political person to be willing to play the game and make certain concessions in order for that to happen. The fact that he ended up working with Trump tells you that he's a consummate politician that's like, I will do what I have to get the power that I want to do the most that I can. And that usually goes bad in the end, by the way, just saying. Patel, I think they are terrified of Kash Patel. They are terrified of what is going to happen if that man takes over the FBI, which will be one of the highest officials inside the DOJ with reporting to someone that reports directly to the President of the United States. And so I think if they're going to kill one, more so than what's his name, I can't think of his name right now, the guy that they put up for Secretary of the Army or the Secretary of Defense, whoever he is, the guy that he was a major in the military. I can't think of his name right now. He was a newscaster. Seems like a really solid dude. The one that Whoopi Goldberg said knows nothing about the military, even though he was a major in the military with multiple combat deployments. Tim Walz was a genius, even though he's a liar, but this guy doesn't know anything, whatever. I think Patel will be the most fought placement that we're going to have out there. The left is also going to do something that most of you don't believe they're going to do. They're going to float the most unhinged, lunatic concepts, ideas, and theories you have ever heard in 2025. Why? Because they always do. And I don't mean it the way you probably think I meant it when I just said it. Okay? What I mean is this is the point in the cycle that the party out of power does this. In other words, they can say any stupid shit they want now. They can talk about there's 1,084 genders, and if you don't agree, even if you're a black person, you're the new face of white supremacy. Right. They will go to a level that you'll go, what? You probably think they can't do this. It can't happen. Like, there is no place left for the lunatics to go. They've gone as far off the reservation of sanity as possible. No. So here's what they will do. They will throw the most ridiculous things you've ever heard, even from them, this year, showing you, on one hand, they've learned nothing from what happened in November. They've learned not a thing, but they actually have. And here's what they do. You take a year where you're in control of nothing. You have no power. There's no way you can possibly deliver on anything you promise. The Republicans control the White House. You have a conservative majority in the Supreme Court. The Republicans control the Senate. The Republicans control the House by a thin majority, but it's there. And they control most of the state houses of legislation, and they control most of the governorships in America. So you can say, if we were in charge, we'd do all these wonderful things, even though you didn't when you were in charge. But people believe it because people tend to, whenever they're not happy, blame who's ever in charge. Sometimes they blame people they think are in charge or not even in charge. This is often the case when you have a president from, let's say, the Democrat Party, and the Republicans are controlling the House and the Senate, and they say it's the president's fault, right? Or, you know, I flipped it because otherwise, you know, some people are special. But you could also do it with a Republican controlling the White House, Democrats controlling the legislature, and still people are unhappy and blame the president. So this is just typically what happens. So when you really are out of power, it is the time where you throw the dumbest freaking shit you can at the wall to see what sticks, because no one will remember it in a way that matters. So you throw out like 100 of the most ridiculous ideas and thoughts and concepts you've ever heard, and five of them, even though they are completely lunatic fringe, stick. You go into your 2026, an election year, you grab those ones that stuck and you run with that stupidity. So I'm promising you this one's going to come true. You will hear, like, you think they have just, there is no way they could be worse. Wait. Watch. It won't be March, and you'll be going, holy shit. It will come like freaking rain in a thunderstorm, man. Trump will talk shit to everyone, but only as a bluff to try to gain advantages. And this will be the tariff talk. So, Mexico just decided, you know what, all this tariff talk, we'll get ahead of it. We're going to tariff the United States to import into Mexico 25%. Well, you don't have a very affluent society. That's going to hurt you more than it hurts us. It's going to be Trump's response. But you imagine Trump just going, that's interesting. Okay. And exactly how much remittance is sent to Mexico every year? How much money is sent back to Mexico by Mexicans working in the United States illegally? Maybe we should put a tariff on remittances, which are already exuberantly high. Yes, this will push more people into cryptocurrency, but cryptocurrency is money under the table as far as governments are concerned, and that doesn't help the government of Mexico. So there'll be a lot of this tariff back and forth bullshit, and eventually it will mostly work itself out. So when I say it's a bluff, I don't mean that he won't do it. I mean that it is not a permanent solution. It is a lot like a sanction is used often to prevent war. We'll sanction you, and if you stop doing what we don't want you to do, we'll take the sanctions away. That's going to be a lot of this. And you'll see things like what he's doing right now with Panama, telling Panama we'll take the canal back. A lot of people going, you can't do that. Actually, if you read the treaty that Carter signed with the Panamanians in 1977, there are provisions for the United States to do it. Jack, you're a sovereign nation. Stop the stupidity. I know you people are out there. I hear from you every day. Right? I hear from you a lot less. I think you're starting to realize that I don't care that you freak out like this when you don't even have it right. I am saying there are provisions in the 1977 treaty with Jimmy Carter, initiated with the Panamanians, that allow for, if certain things are not done in certain ways, the United States to reassert control of the canal zone. I will also tell you this. The Panamanian government that I knew in the 1990s when I was stationed there was not capable of managing the Panama Canal zone full stop without the assistance of the United States. When we left, that didn't change, and it hasn't changed, and it's being run by the Chinese. The Panamanians do not have the logistical capability, the national wealth, the organization, or the lack of corruption necessary to run something like that on their own. That's why they immediately got in bed with the Chinese. The Chinese were waiting when we pulled out. I talked about this all the way back in 08 when I started the show that was going on. This is not an advocacy. This is just reality. That's what's going on. And so what Trump really wants is preferential treatment for U.S.-based shipping to get lower fares through the canal. And so there'll be a lot of bluffery, you know, and threats, and then he'll take what he can get. Art of the deal. How bad can I make it hurt for you not to deal with me? Will be the modus operandi there. The Ukraine war will wind down so quick you won't believe it. It'll be amazingly fast because it's a very simple play from Trump to make it happen. He's going to pull the money. Once the United States says, we're not giving you any more money, we're not doing it. This is why Brandon threw them a bunch of money at the end, including like some crazy amount of money. I think like $50 billion loan. They're never paying it back. What Trump's going to do, and again, I know some of you are going to be mad at me for saying this, and you really need to just again, listen, I'm a weatherman. What Trump is going to say is, you guys need to get to a table and start talking to each other. And if you don't start talking to each other, I'm not going to give you any more money. That will put them at the table talking to each other. The political climate in Ukraine is not what you think it is. It's not what the TV says. The average Ukrainian wants this war over. The average Ukrainian has never been to the Donbas if they live like in Kyiv or to the west of Kyiv. Many people in Ukraine have never been out there. They don't give a shit. That's where all the dirty Russians live in their mind. They don't want to be there. When the war started and they thought they could win fast, they wanted to do what any nation does, assert their nationalism and win fast. It hasn't worked out. It hasn't been good. About 10 to 20%, depending on whose estimates you believe, of the entire country has fled Ukraine. Think about that. Think about instead of the massive number of illegal immigrants that came into this country, let's imagine none of them came in. And 10 to 20% of the country in the United States, we left. Now, who leaves? Who leaves a country not last as refugees, but who leaves first? Intelligent, upwardly mobile people with resources that can. The brain drain happens first. They have lost an incredibly large number of people with resources and money and business connections and things like that. They have hauled ass. They've also had roughly 500,000 men killed in the war. I don't care what MSNBC says. I don't care what CNN says. I don't care what Fox News says. The number is north of 500,000 men, and they've had more than 500,000 injured to the point of incapacity where they even the stringent rules they have for conscription and redeployment in the Ukraine, they're like, this guy can't go. He can't go back. That's 1 million men taken out of the fight. This cannot continue. This cannot continue. And so it will end relatively quickly. And we will spin it as to our side won, even though this is the conclusion. When this started, I said, okay, we did stupid things. We caused this. And the best case scenario is Russia takes the Donbas. That reality was the same then as it is now. And people called me, you know, all kinds of hateful things, a tool of Putin, a Russian stooge on Russia's payroll, a Russian. Just, guys, I'm not that fucking important, okay? I'm not important enough for fucking Putin to cut me checks, for fuck's sake. I just analyze things and I call balls and strikes. I said that then. You don't know anything. You're a redneck hippie duck farmer. Yes, I am. I gave myself that name. I know. And I could see this. Which means all these merchants of fucking death that have caused this and then profited from it knew that too. And they wanted to destroy Ukraine. Because now the plan is BlackRock and Brown & Root, et cetera, are all coming to save the day and rebuild Ukraine with America's money. And Trump, for all of the talk, will think that's a great idea. He'll think that's a great idea, and he'll send them right in. And if he doesn't, the left will scream that he doesn't care about Ukraine. He doesn't want to rebuild it. And when he does, they'll say he's just giving money to his billionaire friends. So there is no winning in this for the orange man, but it is going to be what it is going to be. So you might think, well, he's saying that Trump is going to, you know, de-escalate war. I say he's going to de-escalate a war, not wars, not S. He will not do a fucking thing to restrain Israel. Not one thing to restrain Israel. He will tell them, go nuts with it. He'll take all the money that would have went to Ukraine and give it to fucking Israel. And I am becoming more and more of the belief that if it wasn't a let it happen, it might even have been a made it happen with the initial attack by Hezbollah on Israel. And I'm not saying that it was like Mossad operatives or anything. It was Hezbollah. But I think they let it happen on purpose. I really do, because what they're doing right now, they're be given a pass to do by anybody with the capability to prevent it. And without that happening, that would have never happened. If they just decided we've had enough of this shit and they went and did what they're doing right now without that terrorist attack, everybody would be like, bro, no, you can't do that. But now everybody's like, well, they got to do it. And I think that if people knew how dark the men behind the curtain in Israel were, they would shit their pants. Now, unlike a lot of people that are aware of that, I'm not myopic. So anything and everything that touches Israel, I don't instantly hate, you know, with no nuance whatsoever. And I think a lot of my, as I call them, my fully retarded libertarian friends can't do that. They can't use any nuance anywhere in the world. And I understand there's certain realities you have to contend with. Just like the U.S. has to contend with Russia under Putin, we have to contend with Mossad in Israel and Netanyahu. We have to. And that's just the reality that we find ourselves in. But I think that conflict will increase, and it will end one of two ways. One is bad and one is worse. It will either spiral into a regional and potentially a global war, or it will end with the near obliteration of what's been referred to up to now as the occupied territories. And I think that's the more likely outcome, that Israel will not stop until there's nothing left of them. And they may indeed take over part of Syria now. We'll see. That's not an official prediction on that one. That's just a possibility. There will be a Bitcoin bill that will pass in Congress, but it's really going to be a crypto bill. There will be good and bad of it. When it happens, I'll say, here's the good things. And people will say, you're a shill for the state. And I'll say, here's the bad thing. And people will say, you can't even see the good. And I'll be right where I always am, just being honest. I do think we're going to get one of the most important things in this bill is a de minimis purchase number. I don't know what that number will be. The floated number is $600. It may get reduced. It may even get increased. Who knows? But what that will mean is if you had some Bitcoin or other crypto, and let's say you got it when you got it was worth $50, and now it's worth $100, and you bought a $100 item for it, you're supposed to treat it as a $50 profit and report it as a capital gain when you made the purchase, even though you didn't exchange it as a trade into another crypto or into dollars. I had $100 worth of crypto XYZ. Jason here in the live chat was selling, I don't know, chocolate-covered ants. And I bought $100 worth of chocolate-covered ants. I'm supposed to report that as not only did I spend $100 that Jason has to report as revenue, but I made a $50 profit because of the appreciation. I think that will go away. I think it might get sold with, well, the other side of it is they get to the capital loss. So if you take away the gain, you take away the loss. So if you're saying that it's worth it, you're already admitting that crypto always goes up and never goes down, and that's stupid. So I think that we'll get some kind of de minimis purchase in there. I think that there'll be more tracking. I think it will make anonymous technologies. Notice I didn't say anonymous currencies. Anonymous technologies more difficult to operate and run. Because right now we have technologies to let you send Bitcoin, and it would take the full-on NSA approach to targeting you to figure out what happened. Can they figure it out? Probably. But can they mass surveil it? No. No. And most of it's low-dollar money anyway. It really is. The most commonly used currency for money laundering in the United States is made out of paper. Yeah. It has a United States seal on it and Ben Franklin's picture. More crime is committed using United States $100 bills than any other currency on the planet, infinity. But that gets ignored. States will continue to go all in on nationalized socialism, or they will push for more sovereignty. These two things are going to happen at the same time. You're going to have states like Texas, Florida, maybe South Carolina that are going to be like, we don't want to be told what to do by Washington. And we are going to start doing things like, you know, food freedom bills, et cetera, in our state. We are going to start nullifying more and more federal legislation. And states like California, Oregon, and Washington are going to beg for more nationalism, but they're not going to call it that, right? Because nationalism bad, right? And socialism good. But what socialism really is in this country is fascism. These states like Oregon and Washington and California and Illinois and Massachusetts and New York, they're being run in a fascist operational model. National socialism. And they want no variance between the states. New York does not like competing with Florida. New York is not a fan of how many, and New Jersey doesn't either. New Jersey's probably the number one state for this. People live and work there their whole fucking lives. They go into retirement. They go from saving and investing to spending. They buy shit. You want that person, if you are a state government, to stay right where they've been their whole life, in a shithole you call Newark or wherever they're, you know, wherever the hell it is in the Garden State. You don't want them to leave. But that is the time when most people leave. They say, fuck this, it's cold here, my money's not treated well here, and it's a shithole. And they go to Florida or some other state in the Sun Belt. They don't like that. They want it kept as uniform as possible. They want federal leveling done. They don't like federalism, right? They want it federally controlled to equalize the differences between the states, so they reduce this this basically internal immigration model where people are like, fuck this, and they emigrate to another state, right? They don't like that. So you're going to see those guys push for more control, and these other states fight for less control, and a migration more and more toward some level of systemic breakup of the country. That's not going to happen in 2025, I don't think, anyway. I don't think that's going to happen, you know, for the next 10 years. They'll still be in the United States, but we're heading in that direction. And then the question becomes, can there be a rectification found? Because I don't think there's a true political will for a true civil war in current times. We'll have to see if I'm right or wrong about that one, if I'm allowed to see it happen. But I think that's exactly the direction that we're heading in. Medicine, multiple cures for cancer will occur. They will be marketed as a cure for cancer, but they will not cure cancer. They will treat and push into remission certain cancers. An example is the Russian cancer vaccine. If you heard about the Russian cancer vaccine and you're like, fuck Bill Gates, I'm not getting a cancer vaccine, you're an idiot. I'm sorry, you're an idiot, at least in this one area, because you didn't read past the headline. First of all, it's Russia. I don't think Bill Gates can step foot in Russia without getting arrested, by the way. I'm just saying. You can check into that. I know certain other people in the banking world, like the Rothschilds, can't step foot. There's an open arrest warrant in Russia for the Rothschilds. Any member of the Rothschild family that steps foot in Russia will be immediately arrested by decree. Okay? So Bill Gates and Russia don't go together. They're on opposite ends of the spectrum, okay, from a standpoint of what they want to accomplish. It's not one's good and one's bad. They both are bad to varying degrees, but they're not the same. But the Russia cancer vaccine is not a vaccine to prevent cancer. Is it an individualized vaccine prepared for the individual who already has cancer to fight the specific cancer that they have using their own immune system? And this is what mRNA technology was developed for. This was the promise that Moderna was making when they filed with the SEC to go public back in 2016 or 2017. mRNA vaccines were never supposed to be used to produce an en masse vaccine. They were targeted vaccines that were designed to ramp the immune system to go after a specific pathogen. That's one cancer cure. But how do I know cancer cures will be announced? Because Trump's talking about cancer curing cancer in 2025. Let me tell you something. When major politicians start saying we're going to do a thing, the thing's already been done. That's why they say it, so they can take credit for it when it happens. Mitt Romney promised what when he was running against Barack Obama? North American energy independence. I must have heard that, and I can't tell you how many times I heard the correction. North American energy independence, right? Anybody remember old Mitt saying that, right? And Obama just didn't say anything about it at all because he didn't need to. And somebody in the think tank said, just shut up about this. Don't worry about it. But do we get it? Yeah, we got it, because we were going to get it anyway, because it was already coming. It was already happening. The orange man is telling you we're going to have cures for cancer because we already have them, and they're going to be rolled out in 2025. And again, this does not mean that if you get cancer, you're going to go get a shot, you're going to be better. It means there'll be new treatments, and some of them will be highly effective using new angles and new vectors of attack on cancers. There's also going to be a bifurcation more strongly than ever between natural animal-based foods and vegetables. and a grain-based SAD diet. There's going to become a diametric opposition to each other with more and more entrenching on both sides. And it's sad that that's the case, because the science is clear that the way that we are advised to eat and the foods that we are advised to eat are bad for human health. And the only thing you have to do to see that is to remove emotion from the equation. You have to simply imagine that there's a population of beings, humans, mammals, I don't give a shit what they are. And this population has a whole bunch of chronic illnesses that historically it never had. And you want to know why. The first thing you would look at, if you're intelligent in any way, is what those beings are eating. And if we go back 150 years, we had a lot of problems due to diet, but they were almost exclusively malnourishment. In other words, it was simply that people didn't get enough food, and most illnesses were either malnourishment, not enough food, period, or they were hygiene issues. You know, not having, you know, reliable running water and sewage, for instance. Those things were largely rectified. And then all of a sudden, everybody's living longer for a very short period of time. And then all of a sudden, we have all these chronic conditions that nobody had 150 years ago. Well, what changed? High-density living? We've had high-density living for 10,000 years. Modern agriculture, when you say it the way that they mean it there, we've had modern agriculture for 10,000 years. That's what created society. We've definitely had disease collapses of society throughout history that were directly related to high density and all. Well, we didn't have chronic. And what we did have, it was chronic, meaning ongoing, long-term, lifelong, was directly related to malnutrition, things like rickets and other problems like that. If you look at the one big change, it's what people eat. But it's activity levels. Some, but not that much. There's plenty of activity going on all over the place. Go out and look. People walk all over the place. The gym memberships are through the roof. The exercise industry is huge. Is it as much as it should be? No, but it's not enough to explain it. There's one thing that universally explains things like type 2 diabetes being epidemic today, and that's diet. And so all we have to say is, what didn't people eat 70 years ago? Even just 70 years ago, 1950. And the answer is, one of the biggest things they didn't eat was seed oils. And the other biggest thing that they didn't eat was high fructose corn syrup. Those are your two biggest things that people eat readily now that prior to this blow up in chronic disease, they never ate. They also didn't eat in the volume and the quantity. And they didn't eat food that was processed to the point of hitting the bliss point, which is where we take fat and sugar to a certain point that people eat more than they would otherwise. They eat past the point of satiation. So we know why this has happened, and we refuse to admit it. And part of it is the giant, huge, massive trillion-dollar oligarchy that profits from selling the food and treating the illnesses, sure. But more of it's internal. The day people just don't go down the boxed food aisle and the frozen food aisle and buy the garbage, the entire market will shift. You're doing it. And I don't mean you individually, folks that are listening to me, because many of you aren't. When I say you, I mean the American people and Western culture as a whole. You're doing it. They're selling it to you because you buy it. You might have been tricked into buying it, but how long can you use that? What it makes me think, when people say that, it's like talking to somebody who says, but yeah, I know I do a lot of things wrong with my kids, but I was raised poorly. Well, you're 35 fucking years old. How long are you going to blame your mommy and your daddy for not doing it right and use it as an excuse for you not doing it right? You know the food is poison. Stop eating the poison. But it's not going to happen. What you're going to have is the group of people realizing the poison is the problem is going to grow and become more vocal and more entrenched and have more proof what we say works. And the fat positivity and all the other shit will continue on the other side. It's genetics. They're just lucky. They work really hard at it. You don't have to. Here's a GLP-1. That bifurcation will grow. Okay. Next, we are going to have because of that bifurcation, a new focus on animal-based agriculture will begin to emerge, driven by its health benefits. But it will be niche. But it will be a very big niche. There's going to be a lot of people that go into cattle, sheep, goats, chickens, rabbits, all of it. There, by the end of the year, there will be massive amounts of underground sales going on of animal-derived product or animal-produced agriculture. Because regenerative ag is going to become a buzzword. I'll get to that in a minute, but it's also going to become more and more of a thing. And you cannot do regenerative ag without animals. I'm sorry, vegans. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. Okay? You can't. You cannot recover broad-scale agricultural damage to productive, first sustainable, and eventually regenerative systems without putting animals into the system. Animals must be in the system, and they must be managed for population and impact. There's no way around it. Some of those animals can be wild, elk or deer or antelope, but only to a degree. And the farmer, the rancher, has limited tools to manage population and impact of wild game. They have unlimited from a practical standpoint. Now, there are certain regulations and things like that that create this underground market that will have to come. But if the farmer decides, I need 50 more cows, they can go buy 50 more cows. If the farmer decides, I need to kill 50 cows and sell their meat or sell the cow, whatever it is, there's nothing that stops them. There's nothing to stop. There's no department of making you sad that says you can't kill your cow. Cow's designed to be killed. It's its purpose. It's designed to make meat for people. So you're going to see this massive bifurcation, this massive rise in what we would call regenerative agriculture. Moving on, you're also going to see a huge new branded thing. And it's going to be one of those things that is also going to create this huge bifurcation, this huge two camps. And it's going to be pushed by every single media outlet is the greatest thing that's ever happened to the health of humanity. And I predicted it years ago when COVID started, and it's already here, but it's going to be to a totally different level. And the buzzword you're going to hear is unified vaccines. One vaccine for all the flu. One vaccine for all the COVID. One vaccine for all the HPV. One vaccine eventually, not in 2025, one vaccine for all the cancer. Yes, right now the cancer vaccine is a cancer treatment, not a vaccine. Notice they changed the meaning of the word vaccine. A vaccine now could be something that treats an illness. Funny that, how that happened, right? Almost like there was a reason for it. But we're going to have this idea that you can get one shot for this family of illnesses. And more combo vaccines where I predict within 2 years, maybe not by next year, but it will be impossible to go get. Right now, you can get a COVID flu vaccine combination. I think in another 2 years, you won't be able to do it any other way. If you want the flu vaccine, you're going to have to get the COVID vaccine. If you want the COVID vaccine, you're going to have to get the flu vaccine, and they will both be unified. So you'll have a unified CoFlu or FluVid or some shit they'll come up with, some creative name, and then they'll take an 80s jingle or something or a 70s jingle, a pop song, and they'll show all these happy old people getting their shots and being safe. That's what's going to happen. I ain't doing it, but I'm telling you it's just going to happen. That's coming, is unified vaccines. That's going to be one of the biggest buzzwords of 2025. Digital health platforms are going to be created that will allow patients to track, share, and predict health trends in real time. What do I mean by that? They're going to have this whole concept that you can share your health results anonymously so that we can help everybody be better and healthier and figure out what we need to prepare for it. And they're going to have it'll probably get rolled out through the insurance companies or through the doctors or a little bit of both, where people will feel like they're being healthy because they're monitoring their own numbers more. And of course, they'll tell you what those numbers need to be. And they'll tell you to take this medicine to make your number what it needs to be when you're not even sick. But that's going to be a huge thing, is these unified vaccines and digital health platforms. In concert with that, we're going to hear the word genomics a lot. In other words, we'll be able to tailor your medical treatment to you based on your genetics. Even though that like 98% of how we treat people from a medical standpoint and what they should be eating has nothing to do with genetics, rather epigenetics. You have genetics, that's your underlying base code. There's nothing you can do about it. If you genetically were born like I was with a pretty much a blind left eye, then you were. Tough shit. It is what it is. Epigenetics are on top of genetics. That's why you can take two twins that are separated at birth and live in different families, and one's a fat ass and one's a health nut, right? Because the one, they don't have any different genetics, right? The guy that's 400 pounds has the same genetics as the guy that's like 190 and built. It's the same genetics, but they act like it's genetics, right? But they're going to use that, and they're going to use the other term will be personalized medicine. I promise you, you're going to see, especially, you'll hear it some in the news and the media, but if you're reading venture capital proposals, those are going to be two of the hottest terms in 2025. We're doing genomics and personalized medication with digital health platforms that help our patients track, share, and predict health trends in real time. I'm telling you, you're going to see VC proposals like that everywhere right now. And a ton of facts about vaccine risks and lower than expected effectiveness, and the real truth about what's actually been going on with vaccines, how manufacturers have been protected by the government from the consequences of their own actions with the Act of 1986, put in place by Reagan, of all people, will come out. RFK will probably end up running HHS, and even if he doesn't, what Orange Man will do is a dirty little thing where he'll give him some position that he doesn't need approval for and actually give him access to what he wants. One way or another, the data is going to come out. And the average person will go la, 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 and not care, and still tell you something stupid like, vaccines are safe and effective, as though they're all the same. And the unified vaccines are the safest vaccines ever and the most effective ever. And everybody will ignore the real data that will be released, and Big Pharma will continue its march. Jack, you're supposed to be on the side of, I am. I'm just telling you what's going to happen. The dark side is going to win this one because the average person is an idiot. The average person is an idiot. You can have God show up and tell them these things are true, and they won't listen. They won't listen. They'll say, that's not really God, it's AI. I'm serious, man. That's what's going to happen. All right. Education, technology, and science. I know we're going long today, but it's the last one of the year. Stick with me. And again, I'd love a scorecard at the end of the year for this. A serious revitalization of the moon mission will happen, but nothing really that you can see in 2025, just talk. Trump's going to come back in. It's going to be one of his big mission statements. His moonshot will literally be a moonshot. Put a man back on the moon, right? And it probably will happen during his administration or shortly thereafter it. And there is a lot going on, and he will claim that this is all him, and it's not all him, but he will probably be the push needed to make it actually happen, because there's been a lot of stalling and all. And I know I have some special choice. We never went to the moon, and it's not possible to go to the moon. Okay, fine, whatever. Believe whatever you want, and you'll tell us that the new moon landing is fake too. And when people are already there on the moon, you'll say they're not really there. And when people are living on the fucking moon, you'll say they're not really there, and the Earth is flat, and none of the rest of us will care what you have to say. You'll never have any proof points ever. You'll have some weird things, you know, and you're done. I don't have time for you. I really don't. None at all. Zero. But we are going to see a huge move toward that. Just not a lot's going to happen. We won't be on the moon or anything in 2025. But that program will get kicked in the ass a little bit. And I think Elon will have a lot to do with that. And I'll tell you, it's the one place there won't be any doging as far as actually cutting costs. There may be some leaning out efficiency there, but, you know, that benefits him, so he's not going to cut that. And the reality is, to have Mars missions that are sustainable, you have to have a lunar colony. I won't get into exactly why today. I've talked about it before, but it has to do with something called the Lagrange point and being out of the gravity well and being able to resupply oxygen and hydrogen, which is what rocket fuel is, and to be able to have kind of this jumping off point to start to colonize Mars, which initial Mars colonization won't start until the late 30s. Elon will be an old man. And most of the initial colonization and building will be done by robots, which is the real reason that Elon's building robots. It's not so every house will have a robot. Forget it. I didn't even work in the Star Trek universe. Some of you guys read the Picard novels that go in between the Picard episodes, and you know what I'm talking about when I say it didn't even work in Star Trek, right? But yeah, that's what that is. That's what that all is. So we'll see this big push toward getting us back onto the moon. We're also going to have a quantum computing explosion in talk and discussion, and we'll start to see a bit of an action, right? We're going to actually see some actual quantum computing really begin to do some things. It's going to be very expensive to do. It's not going to be anything we can't already do. It'll just be that we can do it faster initially. And so you'll see a lot of talk in the space and see some product rollout. That's one prediction. The next prediction is this is going to lead to a full-on cyber arms race. So there's going to be this renewed mindset to improve cyber protection and offensive capability utilizing quantum. So quantum will both be an offensive and a defensive weapon in this arms race. The next prediction is most of the talk initially will be about it's going to destroy Bitcoin. It's going to destroy Bitcoin. It's going to destroy Bitcoin. This is stupidity because it's actually much easier to modify Bitcoin for quantum resistance than it is the database at the Department of Defense or the database at Bank of America. Because of the way the encryption works and how it's enforced with consensus nodes and mining that's distributed around the planet. A centralized model is easier to hack than a decentralized model. A centralized model has the advantage it's easier to modify. You don't have to convince people en masse through consensus to modify it. So you can change quicker, but you have less ability to defend. So you have quantum defending against quantum, instead of quantum resistance defended against quantum. And this is where you may see one of the greatest prophecies ever fulfilled, and it's not mine. It's Jason P. Lowry's, who's a major in Space Force, who wrote a book about Bitcoin. And right now, it is escaping me what the name of that book is, and I wish somebody would tell me here. But the thesis of the book, and everybody thinks it was just about Bitcoin. It was actually about Bitcoin and warfare and cyber warfare. And the idea was that Bitcoin is so defensible that it can actually be used as a technology soft war. There it is. Thank you so much, Arizona Renaissance man. Soft war. Soft war. The entire premise of that book, which is now out of print somehow, and like a copy of this thing in print right now is something like $175 on the used market, unless there's another version of it I'm unaware of. It seems like somebody somewhere pulled back the initial authorization that said, go ahead and you can publish this book, sir. No, you can't anymore is what it's. I don't know. Somebody knows the story behind why that book disappeared, but I just put this out. I had no idea you couldn't buy this book for normal money anymore. And it was never released electronically, at least intentionally, and Jason said it was because the graph's in charge. Blah, 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 bullshit, Jason. Nobody believes you, not me, that's for sure, because I wanted it in an electronic copy for a very personal reason. I often read a book at night in bed with the lights out. I can't do that unless I have an electronic version of the book. If I want to be awake still reading and my wife wants to be asleep, I want the lights out. Same on her end. We try to read electronic books at night so that the lights can be out and it's a sundowning thing, helps us get to sleep. So that's why I wanted it. Jason P. Lowry, Major United States Space Force, wrote the book, Evelyn. And that book is a summary of the viewpoint that we are moving to a new layer of war. Okay, that we have land and sea, right, and air and space. That is the dimensions of war right now. Everything that happens in a war in this country right now really is about dominating land, sea, air, or space. But now we have another dimension of warfare, cyber. And of course, we've always had that threat. As long as we've had networked computers, we've had a potential for that. But we're moving into a new layer where that actually might become the most dominant place to exert force in warfare, and therefore require the greatest defense. And the treaty is that in the end, Bitcoin will be the defensive technology. So that could be what we see come out of that. And if you haven't read the book and you can get a hold of a copy without it costing you two Benjamins, it's probably worth reading. You can learn a lot from it. And I'm sure it exists in electronic format somewhere. And if somebody wants to let me know, I know you're not supposed to, but I'll let people know how they can find it. I will not be part of distributing it, though, because that's where you get your ass into real trouble from a legal standpoint. But this will lead to a full-on cyber arms race. Bitcoin seen as the target of quantum, but mana being the defense for other less secure technologies. In fact, I can see people, this might be a solution to mining. It's basically paying the miners in their fees. A certain portion of that might be paid for using Bitcoin as an encoding technology. So it's secured with the physical asset, but it's used as a data protection technology. And Agoras Tax Advice says, software is available on the Internet Archive, it appears. So do with that information as you will. Augmented reality and virtual reality are going to be pushed heavily into the corporate world for training and customer engagement training. And I'm putting the training for customers in air quotes because it's really marketing. And what I mean is we're going to start having more and more things like medical training where doctors are performing surgery essentially on holograms. But we're also going to see more and more of this technology enabled to allow companies to train their customers. And that really will be very effective marketing. So I think you'll see a lot of ramp up of AR and VR. And that's probably one of my weaker predictions. I don't know how far that'll actually go in 25, but you'll definitely start to see it again in the venture capitalist proposals and things like that. AI will drive education in four distinctive ways going forward. Okay, so it's really four in one here. One, independent education built with AI, which would be what I do. Home food systems. I promise you I've used AI in the creation of every course that I've done, and I'll keep doing so because I can move faster and I can sanity check things and I can research things much more quickly doing so. But the actual production is me. When you log into a course and you listen to me give you a lesson, in my educational platform, it's me. It's all me. I may have used AI tools to develop things. I may have done some image generation with it as it gets better for graphs and flow models and things like that. I may lean on it a little bit more, but I will produce it because I don't believe that AI can teach you about biochar as effectively as I can right now. I just don't believe it, so I would not allow it to happen. But that is independent ed built with AI. In other words, it's not part of a university system or a corporate training program. It's completely independent. The student and the teacher choose each other. That's one. But number two will be independent ed driven by AI. Courses that you will take, you might not even know there's no human behind it. It is 100% developed and delivered by AI. That will be another way. Then you're going to, and this is all going to happen this year coming. This will all happen. Then you're going to have public and university education driven by AI. They will skip right over using it to make the teacher better to using it to make the teacher nothing but a babysitter. And that's already happening in some levels. But this will become more and more of a thing. And the reason is that conventional education is very suited to the AI model. Because conventional education, being conventional, is one size fits all. And so, and then conventional education has a very specific set of rules, and we are always teaching it as it was at the time the curriculum was developed. In other words, if I'm teaching you something on biochar, and in the middle of that course, I find out something new, I add it in. Conventional lessons plans and things like that, and school plans and stuff, a bunch of bureaucrats voted on it 3 years ago, and they're still teaching it. It has not been updated, and certain things don't need it. We do not need to update math in general. We might change some methods of how we teach it, because that way we keep people off balance, and the student relies on the teacher and the school, and the parent can't really help because you learned it one way and your kid learned it another way. And even if they get the right answer, they're wrong because they didn't do it the way they were taught. Yeah, that's why they do that. But in the end, math is math. Calculus is calculus, right? Algebra is algebra. Trigonometry is trigonometry. The triangle theorem, Pythagorean theorem, is not changing, right? Okay? That's not changing. So if you program that in, or you let AI teach it as it is, it's very much a commodity-based education, which all our education is today. It's a great way to look at it. It's commodity-based education. A person that graduates K-12, you know, they have certain things they can do and certain skills and certain knowledge, and they've proven proficiency at least for a few minutes when they took the test. If you want to make test scores go up, use AI. It will be far more effective than a human. It doesn't ever get tired. The student can ask for the answer, for the explanation over and over again, and that's what you're going to see. And then you're going to see, this is going to be the biggest disruptor to the world of education that's ever occurred. It doesn't mean it's good, but it will be the biggest disruption to the legacy university system that is extorting money from young people with no hope that their investment will ever pay off. Right now, the vast majority of people that go to college are not going to do any better in life because they went to college. And they will be saddled with debt maybe for the rest of their life. That's about to end. These universities are going to have to innovate, cut costs, and do better, and they're going to have to commoditize education. And when you start commoditizing something, its price goes down, and there's a reason. Trump is going to do a free online college that anybody in America can attend online completely for free and get a degree, and it is going to be required that the degree be accepted as a standard college degree. It doesn't mean that when your kid, because you're rich, went to Harvard, and I'm interviewing somebody from the University of U.S., right, or I'm interviewing somebody from Harvard, I might not give preference to Harvard because they're Ivy League. What it does mean, though, is when you say bachelor's of administration or equivalent required, you're going to have to accept it. Or when somebody wants to take a master's level courses at your college, you're going to have to accept their bachelor's. That's what it's going to mean. And so what this is going to do is completely demonetize base level university education. If somebody wants to go into engineering school, they may be able to take all their core courses, but they still have to go to a university to get a higher level engineering degree, even at a bachelor's level. But it's going to demonetize the commodity basis, because most people's majors today are irrelevant, and 80% of what they take is the same across the board. Marketing, communications, whatever. Like, it's all just bullshit, right? And it all qualifies you for absolutely nothing, but you'll be able to do it for free. And that's going to happen if it's not implemented in 2025. By the end of 2025, the writing will be on the wall that it's going to happen. That one is going to happen. I have some inside info on that one going to happen. And then overriding on education, homeschool will continue to grow. I know that's pretty much a softball. That's been pretty much a trend ongoing. But what's happening is we're getting more and more tools that empower parents to have their children learn at home, but not be directly responsible for their learning with these platforms that are being developed. And you're also getting more and more ability for people to work from home. So once you get, I'll tell you the truth, once you get a kid to about what you would think of like the fourth-ish grade level, as long as they're not having trouble, you don't have to do much as a homeschooler anymore. If they can read and write and learn, you sit them down in front of a screen and you push go. And then you step in when they need your help. And when you can't help them, you go to someplace like OutSchool and you get them a personal tutor for the thing they're having trouble with and they go for it. The easier it gets to do, the more people do a thing, no matter what it is. So that's going to fuel the growth of homeschool, these new platforms and this new technology. And we're going to end up where you're not going to go to OutSchool. The AI driving the educational platform will be the tutor to the child, where that kid can say, I don't get it. And it'll explain it a different way. I still don't get it. It'll explain it a different way. And is this going to work for everybody? No, because some people are not smart. Some people are low IQ. I'm sorry. I know everybody wants to believe, you know, nurture over nature. And I think on the big issues, that's true. But there are stupid people. And I don't mean like some people are stupid about this and some people are stupid about that, but everybody's a genius at some. No, there are some people that are just dumb. I know I'm not supposed to say it, but all you got to do is look around and you'll say, but it's back to nurture, Jack. If that person was properly it, no, I'm sorry. And I don't know if that person that I'm talking about is legitimately that dumb, or they just don't care and no one and nothing can make them care enough to try to learn. I don't know which one the real cause is or if it's both. But I'm telling you, there are people you can try till you're blue in the face with and they will not learn a thing. And I also believe that if the person has chosen not to learn a thing, you cannot make them learn it. And if a person has chosen to learn a thing, you cannot prevent them from discovering it. Okay, so we'll never fix everything. All we have to do is be better. And this model will be better. Diet and nutrition. I'm going to go fast because we're at 2 hours now. Despite small victories, the war on meat and quality fat will continue. And they will ramp it up in the next couple of years and definitely going through 2025. You're killing the planet if you eat steak. That will be the message, and that will continue. And it will be in direct opposition to everything that we know scientifically about the human diet. And so all while we're building up more options there, the war against it will continue. By the end of the year, it will be impossible for you to argue that grain is good for you. There will be so much data dumped in the coming year. There will be so many testimonials in the coming year. It will be so in your face that probably the worst thing for humans, other than seed oils and high fructose corn syrup, is grains. The very thing we call the bread of life is bad for humans. And there's dozens of reasons that it's bad for you. And I don't want to hear your shit about ancient wheat and emmer wheat and all this other crap. I'm sorry. All the same science applies. The human being did not evolve to eat something that's as inefficient to feed humans as grain. Grain is not it's not even an efficient human food, and I can prove it. Take away the subsidies and see what happens to it. Take away the subsidies and see what happens. It'll collapse overnight. The closest thing to an efficient grain to grow that's totally not nutritious without heroic measures like nixtamalization is maize, corn. But when we talk rye and wheat and barley, it is not efficient as a human food to feed a population that numbers in the billions. Look how little it is. Look how much you have to process it to make it edible. If you took away all the fast food shit made out of it and said anybody that wants it can have grain, the only hitch is you have to grind it and do something with it yourself. Global grain consumption, especially in developed countries, would plummet overnight. It wouldn't be a thing. Go try to eat a handful of wheat berries the way they come, and you'll see what I mean. I can go out in the woods and pop any mammal that's there, skin it, and eat it the same day I kill it. The measures necessary to do that are simplistic. There's a whole bunch of foods that we grow commercially and grow wild. You can walk out, yank it off a vine, stick it in your beak, and eat it, and it will give you nourishment and calories. And none of them are grains. Let me say that again. None of them are grains. How do you get nourishment from a tomato? You pull the tomato off the vine, you stick it in your hole, you chew it, and you swallow it. You get nourishment from a tomato. How do you get it from a carrot? You pull it out of the dirt, you wipe the dirt off it, you eat the carrot. Cucumber, you eat the cucumber. Avocado, you pull it off the tree, you rip it open, you eat the mash out of it, and you throw the pit away. Okay? This is basic understanding. Human beings did not evolve to eat a thing that requires massive amount of human labor and time and technology to process into a thing that you can eat. We haven't been here long enough with the technology to do that for our basal evolutionary traits in our bodies to have shifted. If you just go back even 200 years, plenty of people ate bread. Plenty of people ate grain, but not at the level that they do today. It wasn't in everything that you ate, and it was so much a luxury, no one fed it to livestock. Go back 200 years ago and see how much corn they fed cattle. Cows didn't eat corn 200 years ago. Nobody could afford, and that was the easiest grain to produce and the most productive grain on the planet. We sure as hell were not feeding cattle grain, true grains, like wheat and rye and barley. We're not being fed to cattle. You know what was fed to cattle and pigs in mass in this country until about 100 years ago when the chestnut blight came as chestnuts? Farmers used to take horse and buggies into the forest and a coal shovel and shovel cartloads of fucking chestnuts and feed that to their livestock. And certain types of oak acorns as well were fed that way. But we have been misled into believing that this is like some sort of ancient cooperation between man and grass, right? You do not have a crop. You have a liver, okay? Livers are made to break down and help you consume fat and protein. That's why you have, relative to your body, your liver's huge. You're an omnivore. You're supposed to eat these other things. And I am not a complete grain Nazi. I'm just telling you that it doesn't make sense unless you're doing what Dennis Allen says right here. Grain is what was invented to keep people. Let's break that down, and I want to keep moving, but let's break that down in a way that you'll understand immediately. Most people are aware that your dog would be better off eating meat and bone meal than kibble. That's mostly made from rice and wheat. Most people know this. Some people don't. They're special, okay? But most people do acknowledge a canine is only an omnivore because we've processed food in ways that the canine will consume. If you go watch a coyote, maybe they'll eat a berry or two here and there because they're sweet. But in the end, what does a coyote eat? Mostly rodents, small animals and mammals. Wolves will take larger game. Coyotes will sometimes too, but what do they eat? They eat meat. Find any canine anywhere in the world living in the wild, and what do they eat? They eat meat. 99% of their diet is meat. Why don't we feed them meat? Because meat's expensive. We've commoditized grain to where it's cheap with automation and subsidy, so we think it's cheap because it's really not. It's not cheap environmentally. And it's not cheap economically. It's all a lie. But from a standpoint of what comes out of your wallet that you buy at the store to feed to your dog, you feed your dog lesser quality feed, even though in your heart you know you shouldn't because you can afford to. If government is going to feed its tax cattle, it's going to treat us like pets. It'll put us to sleep when it doesn't want us anymore, but it'll give us basic medical care if it can. It wants us somewhat happy, but just miserable enough to stay on the farm and not run away, not challenge the hot wire. That's what we're living in. But you're going to see by the end of this year that anybody who will take 5 minutes to look will be able to prove to themselves that grain is bad, and still the majority of people won't believe it. It won't believe it. They won't believe it. No matter how much you show it to them, such is the programming that's been done to people. Regenerative ag will become a marketing buzzword, and it will end up in danger of being corrupted the way the word organic was. The term organic today means something to me, but not much. Not much. It doesn't mean what it meant when it was originally conceived of as an alternative for people to make dietary choices. Organic is a cleaner version of conventional today. Now, there's a lot of organic farmers that are so far beyond organic that we should really be looking to them as an example. And the reason they call themselves organic is because it works as a marketing buzzword, but they're beyond organic, which means they're also organic, okay? But I mean, the word organic really means what? Carbon-based. So all food is organic. You can't eat anything that's not carbon-based. Not derive any health benefit or any caloric value from it. It has to be carb. All life is carbon-based. All food is living, right? Even the synthetic foods that we're now printing are carbon-based, right? So organic is really just a fake word. Now, regenerative actually means something. To regenerate means to improve, to replace all that was lost and more to the point of infinite sustainability. That's what regenerative means. The word is starting to catch on. And when anything catches on, it starts getting marketed. Our eggs are from regeneratively farmed chickens. I think by the end of the year, it won't happen, but there will be a movement for the government to capture the word regenerative and make it regenerative TM the way that has been done with organic. So I think it will become a movement. It will gain legs. It will do a lot of good, but they will also attempt to capture it. And there will be no policing initially, which will lead to rife abuse, which is create the problem and agitate the problem and then solve the problem, right? Problem, reaction, solution. And the government will come in and say, hey, we need to put some guide rails on this term. We can't have people using it that are hurting the planet. Yeah. Functional foods and beverages will become another marketing buzz phrase. Functional. Like functional fitness became a big thing a few years ago. Now you're going to have functional food, functional beverages. In other words, you can't sleep, so you buy a functional beverage to help you sleep better, okay? Which means they throw a little bit of cannabis of the type that relaxes you into it, and they call it a functional beverage. Stress reduction, mental clarity, it will be more marketing than substance. But that's a term, and again, it will first really show up in your venture capital proposals and things like that, but that's coming. Fake meat 2.0 is coming, which will include things like, here's another, if you monitor venture capital proposals and stuff, huge buzzword coming, precision fermented proteins. Precision fermented protein. What is a fermented protein? Tofu would be an example of a fermented protein. This is precision fermented. In other words, well, Mr. Capitalist Investor, we're able to precisionally ferment the protein so that it has this characteristic at the end. It has this texture, so it's more believable as meat. It has this higher protein yield than in the past, but it's all bullshit. Precision means you altered and played around with the specific strain of bacteria that does the fermentation, or the specific temperature is held with precise control. So now it's precision fermented. We know only these bacteria at only this temperature for only this duration of time, and we brought the temperature up and then down and back up, or whatever bullshit they come up with. But that's going to be a big thing going forward. Lab-grown meats, products derived from algae and fungi will be huge going forward with this attempt to create artificial meat when real meat is the most environmentally conscious thing we could be producing. But, you know, you got to stick with the narrative. And then we're going to have plant-based failed the marketing test, okay? There was this huge attempt to get people into plant-based diets. Now, the reality is that plant-based diet is what Americans are on. We're, now, not all of us, but as a nation, America is on a plant-based diet. They tried to make plant-based diet code word for vegetarian, vegan, and move everybody there, but it failed. But you might be thinking, Jack, how are we a plant-based diet society today? because the average American derives the most calories of their diet from something other than animal product. Bread, chips, cookies, cereals, bagels, etc. Rice, wheat, beans, legumes. This is where we get most of our calories from as a country. Go look at how many calories you get from the number four meal, whatever that is, at McDonald's. I don't even know, right? And everybody will blame the burger. But you look at the meal, it's a giant fry, it's a giant soda, right? It's a giant bun with a whole bunch of shit on it and a little tiny ass one-third or less pound patty, quarter-pound patty. My understanding now, and I haven't been, so I don't know, but when you look at a Big Mac today, it almost looks like they paint the two patties on there, right? They're nothing even compared to what they used to be. It's all bread, vegetables, oils, potatoes. That's a plant-based. Plant-based would mean, literally, if you didn't mean it the way that they try to make it mean, would mean that your diet is based by its majority of caloric intake on plant-derived substances. This failed. We need a new word. You see, this is what we do as a society. We never reflect and go, maybe people rejected it because it was stupid. Like, the Democrat Party can't do that. They just think they got the messaging wrong. Maybe people got tired of their life being miserable and didn't want you anymore. Maybe it wasn't you didn't call it the right thing. Maybe if you used a different way to refer to 84 genders, people would have accepted it. No, maybe people said with common sense, even people that are like very open, very liberal, very progressive about people being gay or dressing like a sex that they're not or whatever they want to be, that's all fine. But don't tell me there's 80 genders. I'm not going to buy that. Maybe people didn't need a different term. Maybe people need you to stop lying to them. But did they learn? No. And will they learn? No. So what's the new term? Here you go. Plant forward. Write it down right now. By the end of the year, you're going to hear nutritionists and dietitians and doctors and all kinds of special people and the idiots they bring on TV and call experts saying it's a plant forward diet now. We need to be looking forward to where we have more plants in our diet. And everybody knows that plants are good for us. And they'll take a true statement and lie with it. Plants are good. Okay, which plants? They're not all the same. It's something like 99% of plants are toxic. And I don't mean the way that some of us, like when we say like lectins are toxic, so overeating beans is bad. I don't mean it that way. When I say toxic, I mean if you eat it, it will make you very quickly sick and or dead. Poison. Okay? Kill you. Or at least make you puke your guts out. You can't eat it. You can't live on it. You can't derive sustenance from 99% of vegetation on the planet. Go eat fucking oak leaves if you doubt me. Go grab the Raleigh St. Augustine grass or the Bermuda grass and start, and you won't directly get sick except from what's on it, but you can't eat that and you can't convert it into calories into the body and energy and function. You can't eat it. It's a very small number of plants that we can eat. And then among those plants, they all still have chemical defenses, even though we've bred a lot of it out of them. Why do they have chemical defenses? Because they can't run away. They can't bite you. They can't escape. They can't fight back with anything other than chemical warfare. This is why plants and fungi employ chemical warfare. Some plants want to be eaten, at least a piece of them. A blueberry wants to be eaten. I'm not anamorphizing, vegemorphizing, however you would say it, a plant, right? I know that the blueberry's not sitting there going, oh, gee, I hope somebody eats me today. Like the blueberry, the individual berry doesn't have a brain, nor does the plant. But from an evolutionary standpoint, a blueberry wants you to eat it. Because before we flushed everything down toilets and lived in houses, and we ran around like all the other animals, which we are on this planet, what did you do after you eat a blueberry? You took a shit somewhere. You didn't shit in a pot. You shit on the ground. And what happened to the seed that passed through your body inside the berry that you ate? It was in a perfect little nitrogen package, and it grew. whether a bird shit it or you shit it, it grew. What value is there to a bean in you eating it? The answer is there's none. When you eat a legume, your digestive process destroys the legume's ability to reproduce itself. So it has no evolutionary advantage to being eaten. So it's developed evolutionary traits to resist being eaten. That's how the species survives. So this is not hard to understand, but that's going to be the new buzz phrase, plant forward. Because everybody knows forward works good. It got Obama elected twice, right? That's what's coming. Evelyn Mishu says, two all beef patties, about a quarter inch each, maybe 3.5 inches in diameter. Yeah, and I don't know what they weigh, but they're not quarter pound anymore. I'm sure of that. I've seen some TikTok videos of people pulling them off, and I'm like, that's not food. I don't know what that is. Everything's got shrinkflation, I guess. In the end, it's going to be a hell of a year. There's going to be a lot of things you can't control. Again, this is a weather forecast. I am not advocating for anything I said today. There's some I think is really good, some I think is really bad, and most of it I see as having good and bad attributes, depending on how you adapt to it. But none of it is, this is what I think we should do this year, right? Or these are the things that I'm going to go help make happen and pretend that I'm somehow affecting these things. I have no effect on anything I've told you today. None. Zero. If I hadn't done this episode, all this shit still would or wouldn't happen the way it's going to happen. Okay. And if I get up on a soapbox and say, we have to fight this one and we have to make this one happen, it won't change the outcome. I know my pay grade is pretty low, but I also know this. Your life will be affected more by your choice of what you do in this coming year than anyone or anything from this list today. You don't have to eat a plant-forward diet. You don't have to live on McDonald's. You don't have to eat the grain and the crude and the crud and the slop that they're going to produce in a laboratory. You will have a way not to. It will be up to you to decide what works. You will be able to perform the observations that say, if I want to improve my vision, my mental acuity, for instance, there are functional things that I can take, herbs and what have you. I don't need a functional beverage made by a giant conglomerate. Doesn't give a fuck about me, right? You don't have to go out and get all the vaccines as though they're all the same. It will be up to you what you choose to do. It will be up to you what you choose to do. Anyway. Let's take a – I have like a few that I starred or people threw me some super chats and ended up in the star. So let's see what I can do here real quick. Liberty Cast says, is the final pullback happening now or just a market correction as a result of a huge PE sell-off? I don't know what you're asking me right there. If you're asking about Bitcoin, I answered it. This is not the top of the market. If you mean the stock, because I don't know what PE sell-off means. If you mean like end of year or something like that. The stock market, I didn't really throw out a prediction for this year. I'll throw that here, and I'll explain why I didn't, because I don't know. This could be an incredible year for the stock market. It could be a terrible one. I'm leaning actually toward a really good one until about the end of the year. And then some sort of end of year surprise fucking everything up. I think there'll be some come to Jesus with the markets soon, but soon could be a year and a half. I really don't know what the Dow Jones and S&P are going to look like in 25. The reality is, even with structural problems, they could look really good because there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm and excitement over a lot of things that come out of the Trump administration from the business community and the investment community, even if they don't work. Initially, you know, you got buy the rumor, sell the news. This could be a year-long phenomenon. So if you want to clarify what you meant by that, I will come look. Okay. Can't remember who it was. I know it's not the top of the market. I understood that. I feel it's a market correction. I still don't know what you're asking me. So if you want to clarify further, go ahead. Otherwise, we're moving on. Moving on, we'll then go to Builder of Castles, who says, why is Porsche building a CO2 scrubber to gas line thingy in South America? Why Porsche? Why are they doing this? And why are people doing this at all? This is why biochar is going to explode as a thing, as a carbon capture technology. Porsche is a German company, and Germany's more wrapped up in cap and trade even than corporations in the United States are. So what they're doing, whenever you see any of these carbon capture, CO2 scrubbing, anything like that, is they're creating a commodity for themselves in carbon offset. In other words, basically, cap and trade is a license to pollute, is one way to look at it. As long as you take enough carbon out of the air, you can do anything the fuck you want that's environmentally unfriendly anywhere else, and nobody really cares. You want to dump trioxins in the ocean? Well, as long as you put the right drainage system around your house, you go ahead and fucking do that, right? They don't give a shit about the environment at all. They have made this CO2 bullshit. All environmentalism is nothing but CO2 greenwashing. Look at how many things. I've said this for 16 and a half years now. But look at how many things there are in the world that if you said, we have to stop this, 90% or more of people that have enough intelligence to understand what you're saying would go, absolutely, we should stop this, right? Absolutely. And what is being done to stop any of it? Nothing. Nothing at all. They created a boogeyman, and they've convinced you as long as we're taking CO2 out of the atmosphere, it's better for the environment. So the reason Porsche is doing that is because there's an economic incentive for them to do it. That's it. If you're looking for a more complex answer, there isn't one. There is no economic incentive equivalent to this right now for companies that produce a lot of pollution. Microsoft right now has a bid out to buy more biochar than exists. Why? Because they can claim the carbon offset. They don't even care if they get it. They're literally buying it and letting other people use it for things because they get the credit because they bought it. They created a money game and they're playing the money game. David says, do you include avocado oil in the same category as seed oil? I do not. I think somebody answered that for you. Avocado oil is not a seed oil because it doesn't come from the seed of the avocado. Avocado oil comes from the oil in the fruit of the avocado. Avocados are extremely high fat, and it's an extremely healthy fat for human beings. Olive oil is not a seed oil because it doesn't come from the pit. It comes from the fruit. Coconut oil comes from the fruit, right? The flesh of the coconut, not from a seed, okay? That's why they're not seed oils. That's also why, by the way, they're not vegetable oils. There is no vegetable oil. You can't buy vegetable oil. I don't care what it says on the label. There's no vegetable oil. What is a vegetable? Lettuce is a vegetable. Go get vegetable oil. A radish is a root vegetable, but you know where you get oil, radish oil from? The seed of the radish. There's actually daikon-type radishes that are grown exclusively to produce oils, and the oil comes from the seed, not the root. It is not a vegetable. It is a seed. Nobody sits down and eats sunflower seeds and say, oh, I'm so glad I got my vegetables. Right? It's not a vegetable. What about corn? Corn is not a vegetable. Corn is a seed. A fruit is a thing that has a seed inside it. A seed is a seed. Sometimes it's in a fruit, sometimes it's not. A vegetable is a vegetative substance. It's an herbaceous thing. A tomato is not a vegetable. It's a fruit. Look it up. A cucumber is not a vegetable. It is a fruit. Okay? The leaves of tomato, contrary to what many people believe, are actually edible, and that would technically be a vegetable. The herbaceous component of a thing is the vegetable. Lettuce is a vegetable. Arugula is a vegetable. Dandelions are vegetables. You got it? Okay, so if it comes from a seed, it's a seed oil. If it doesn't come from a seed, it doesn't mean it's healthy or not. It just means it's not a seed oil. So hopefully that makes sense. I got a $99.99 super chat here from Geo in a Forest, or J-O in a Forest, or I guess that's what it's supposed to say. I hate you, Jack. HealthShare B2B business, you encouraged me to start back in 2012. I am in final stages of due diligence as I sell the biz for $1 million. Nobody should listen to you laugh out loud. So apparently I encouraged this person back in 2012, and I don't even remember, to start a healthcare B2B business, and he's about to cash it out for $1 million 12 years later. I, you know what? I don't know how many stories like that there are in the TSP community of businesses, big and small both, but I know it's triple, if not quadruple digits. And maybe one of my initiatives in 2025 needs to be a place for people with businesses that came at least in part from what we teach can tell their story. Because I really believe that telling your story is the number one way to spread an idea. And for a show that is not a how to build a business show, I think we have more successful entrepreneurs than most shows that are how to build a business. I really do. I think we have, I think there's shows, whether they're, you know, educational marketing, whether they're straight up like real estate shows or business shows or entrepreneur podcasts. I think there are plenty of them out there that are extremely successful from a numbers standpoint that we would trounce with how many people, honest to God, have made a living or retired off of what we teach. And it isn't even really what we teach because we stick to reality and what works. Thank you for that super chat. I really appreciate that a lot. Missile launch. Are you kind of hoping a quantum attack on Bitcoin would cause a dip in its dollar price? I'd love that myself. So a quantum attack isn't going to do shit because there isn't one. Because it isn't going to happen. And the growth capacity, if we change nothing right now, to even entertain the idea of a quantum attack on Bitcoin is 15 to 20 years out. Okay. So it's an irrelevant question if I answer it directly how you asked it. However, do I hope that some announcement about a potential attack from quantum comes out? The market reacts and it tanks the Bitcoin price so I can buy more? Absolutely. That would be great. Here's the reality of the quantum thing, though. I want you to think about this. The first place you would go with quantum tech to attack Bitcoin would not be the most advanced version of Bitcoin. You see, Bitcoin's actually changed over the years. If you run a node, you know this. Occasionally we have new code and we pick up new things. We have soft forks, right? Soft forks mean like we've added this feature, like SegWit, for example, right? So the actively managed Bitcoin wallets that are part of, you know, every wallet has either a node run by, like it's a full self-custody wallet, like something like Zeus. So I'm running a node. My node's got the latest shit running on it. And Zeus is now running on my node. Okay, that's one way. Or you're running a soft wallet. Or you're running a commodity hardware wallet like Trezor. Or you're running a soft wallet like Electium. Okay, and they're running their own nodes and they're running the latest and the greatest. And as you get security upgrades or performance upgrades to Bitcoin, they upgrade. What about the lost Bitcoin? The stuff that's running on wallets that nobody even uses anymore. The initial shit, right? That, like, Satoshi's Bitcoin that hasn't moved since, what, 2010 or something like that? It's the big treasure trove. That's what you would go after first, wouldn't you? Because I'm telling you right now, as quantum continues to grow, there are many security enhancements that could be done by Bitcoin core developers that will be done. This is what I keep saying. It's easier to defend against quantum than to ramp up quantum for attack in that environment where you have, you know, hundreds of thousands of mining machines securing the network every 10 minutes all over the network. The other side of it is if you're going to attack something, As a hacker, you don't do it because you like it. You do it because you want money, right? You want to gain something. If you successfully attacked Bitcoin and got all the Bitcoin, you'd have absolutely no value. You'd destroy the value. So the only reason you would do it is to destroy the value of it. Well, if the government wanted to attack Bitcoin's value proposition, there's a lot of things they could do before they used a Google bank of quantum computers to do it. You know, there's the number one thing holding Bitcoin back right now is honestly accounting practices. So if they're moving in the direction of loosening that, that's not an attack. So could somebody do it because they just wanted to destroy it? I guess, but that's kind of like blowing up the world. Like the most profitable thing you could do with quantum computing as it relates to Bitcoin is to participate in the network. So I just don't see it being that valid. Let's see if there's anything else here. Porsche's German? Yeah, Porsche's German. Moving on, Jack is getting a strip of Punxsutawney Phil's title of prognosticator of prognosticators. I don't see any more questions, so I think I'll wrap up. So that ends it for the year. The rest of the year will be rewinds and flashback Fridays. The next time that we talk in a new episode will be the 2nd of January. It will be an expert council show, so there won't be a live stream. The day after that is a Friday, and so that'll be a Friday flashback. So I will not be live streaming with you again. Let me check here so I don't get it wrong. Until January 6th. So that's a long time away. That's longer than most of my vacations. I am going to take this time and enjoy the downtime. I hope you do too. Crunchy Mama says, have a Merry Christmas. And I haven't forgot you guys. I'm going to promote your event. When I come back is going to be the time that makes sense to start promoting it. I will let you guys know again. So I'll let you guys know that in March, I'm going to be working with Crunchy Mama Farms, and we're going to be doing a beef processing workshop. It's going to be like a 2 or 3 day event. I don't remember exactly how long. He's about 40 miles north of me, and it's going to be awesome. You're going to go home with a bunch of beef. You're going to learn how to process a beef end to end, and I will have more information about signing up for that event when I come back. I also will be, when I come back, telling you about a very small, like half-day workshop here on composting that we'll be doing. And if you want to make sure you get first crack at that, if you email me between now and when I come back, I'll put you in a folder and I'll send the email to all those people first. There's about 5 people in that folder already. We'll just be doing a basic, like I said, half day at our location composting class. But this is it. And again, if somebody wants to make some kind of like scorecard spreadsheet, I think it would be awesome because I'm not going to do it. I don't have time. But I mean, somebody out there probably just wants to prove Jack wrong. And I promise you two things. I gave you the best. I gave you the best that I could possibly give you from my predictions. I didn't hold anything back. I don't have any secret information for paid people only or something. Like, this is the best I can do. Based on my track record, there will be more than half of it that will happen in some way, shape, or form. And I will also be spectacularly wrong about some of them. Don't think this is gospel. People make jokes and call me Spiritodamus or whatever. I think I'm probably more accurate than Nostradamus because I actually make real predictions instead of quatrains of, you know, subject to interpretation stuff, right? But I don't think I actually have a crystal ball. I don't think that I am clairvoyant. I just think I pay attention, and I have paid attention for a long time, and I'm really good at recognizing patterns. And the number one thing I can leave you with today is when a politician promises they're going to do a thing, and that thing is a thing that a politician generally should have no business promising you. So if they promise a tax cut, you may or may not get it. Because even if they mean it, they have to go do it. If they promise you something like a cure to cancer, you're probably getting one. Now, it's not going to, again, you're not going to cure all cancer, but you're going to get one. When they tell you that we're going to have North American energy independence, you're going to have North American energy independence. Because the politician has no connection to the reality. They can't actually deliver it. So when they promise something, it's that they're more informed than you are. They know more about what's coming than you do. They have access to intelligence and information you'll never see, and they're taking credit for something that's already happening before you knew it happened. That's one of the patterns you can recognize. With that, guys, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, and I'll see you again in 2025. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar.
dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.